morning, everybody. We'd like to call the meeting of the Board of Technical Registration to order. Mr. Winter, if you can do the roll call, please.
Alejandro Angel.
Here.
Jack Gilmore.
Present.
Neil Jones. Jason Poos.
Here.
Jason Madison.
Here.
Edward Marley.
Here.
Stephen Knoll.
Here.
Andrew Everon. Eugene Montgomery.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is the call to the public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to the public for no more than 3 minutes. Board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are appropriately noticed that for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that matter be placed on a future agenda. Is there anyone here that would like to address the board on an item that is not on the agenda? Okay. Adoption of minutes. You have the minutes from our May 22nd board meeting. Item 4A.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve the minutes from last month's meeting.
Okay. We have a motion from Mr. Marley and a second from Mr. Noels. All in favor of approving the minutes?
Aye.
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 Okay. Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. We also have minutes of our executive session. Are those circulating? Excellent. Mr. Winter, while we do that, I know we have Mr. Roman on a call-in. Mm-hmm. Is there a specific time for that?
Not that I was given.
No? Okay, thank you. Read 3 pages that quickly. Everybody's reviewed the minutes. Any discussion or motions on the minutes?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the May 22nd minutes of the executive session.
Thank you.
Second.
We have a motion and a second from Mr. Gilmore. All in favor of approving the executive session minutes?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Enforcement matters. Case 6A1, it's listed, this is the matter of Jesse Reeves doing home, responding as American Property Inspections. The firm was not registered, in this case is in front of the board as the company did some work, but it didn't appear to be a home inspection. Their recommendation from staff is that the case be dismissed. Is there any discussion or action the board would like to take?
I move we follow staff's recommendation and dismiss the case.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, any opposed? Motion passes. Item 6A2. Respondent is Aaron Holden from iEngineer. He's a non-registrant, and this case had been in front of the board in January of this year. We sent the case back to staff for further investigation. Since then, I believe Mr. Holden has provided some contracts and plans, so the case is back in front of us. Mr. Kramer is the investigator. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Kramer or for staff? Okay, I do. So I'm.
Of course.
Thanks, Mr. Kramer. So my first thought is, I had a note on my January packet that we asked that an EAC be convened for this case, and I don't think that's happened, so I was wondering why we didn't do an EAC.
I'm sorry, I didn't have that same note. It was, from my recollection, it was sent back to us for the investigation to look into the commercial aspect of the company for building the commercial multifamily homes, and that's what I did. So you wanted an EAC. I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Okay, no problem. I mean, my concern back then was twofold. I mean, one is that they're using the name iEngineer as the company name, and one of the reviewers, one of the assessments, mentioned the need for an EAC because that might lead people to believe that they were offering to provide engineering.
And I think that maybe that's why we didn't do an EAC, is that's an issue that can be handled without an EAC, just a conversation with the character board.
Okay. The other thing I noted, if, you know, they, as I mentioned, they provided contracts and plans from previous jobs. Most of them are from a period after they were acquired or merged with energy inspectors in late 2016. But there's a few that were from before that time. And in page 322 of our packet, for instance, there's a contract with Meritage Homes for Diamante Village, where the work, where the respondent basically proposed to do heat load calculations, equipment sizing, duct design, mechanical construction documents, which seems to me like that's a practice of engineering. And then the next page is 324, it's a page where iEngineer hired M&P Engineering to sign and seal mechanical plans for permit. The note I have for that same project. This is not so much a question as this seems to indicate to me, and then if we keep going to page 330, there's a plan sheet with a title block for iEngineer, but sealed by M&P for that project. So it sort of strikes me as, and what I don't know is whether Diamante Village is a single family or not, but it sort of indicates to me that iEngineer might have been in the business of providing engineering services and then having an engineer seal it, the drawings.
And it could be when it came to the multi-housing. I know the early on in their career, iEngineer was doing the single family, and that was their defense that it's the exception to the rule.
Yeah.
But, you know, the possibility that some commercial slipped through, I guess so, it could have happened. Sure.
Okay.
How do the other board members feel about it? Does it seem like it's the unauthorized, unlicensed practice of engineering?
Is iEngineering even a company anymore?
No.
It's not now.
So from this point on, protecting the public, that no one's going to be confused that iEngineering is an engineering firm because they are no longer a firm. So that aspect of it, I think, has just gone away. You know, the practice of engineering, I mean, if it's a single-family home, then it's exempt. The multifamily, it sounds like he did it and then hired someone to stamp it. Well, that's not on him. That would be on the people that stamped it, if you want to open an aiding and abetting, because that's, I mean, you can't, he's not the aiding and abetting person. The registrant would be the aiding and abetting person. So, you know, in this case, I don't see any reason not to just dismiss this at this point in time. I don't see what, you know, what there is to go against this iEngineering. I mean, they weren't really practicing engineering if they had someone else stamp the drawings.
Well,
I'd like to add to that, though, that it's clear, when I look at these plans, it's clear that M&P was the engineer or did the engineering calcs on this to me. I don't see a lot of abrasion, even though iEngineering is on the title block as somebody that submits the plans or puts them together, but I might not fully understand that component of it either, but it's clear to me that there's two separate entities and there is a responsible registrant here.
And I would agree with that. I think regardless of the name, whether it's I Engineer or I Draw Houses or whatever it's called, they appeared to be more of a drafting service than to do these single-family residences. And then they hired in consulting engineers, which is, quite honestly, the appropriate thing to do. If you don't know how to design mechanical systems, you hire somebody who does. So I'm kind of leaning toward dismissal as well.
Okay, I mean, what I have trouble reconciling is, I don't know that this is the appropriate thing to do. He basically offered to Meritage, which is a large, you know, home builder, to do mechanical engineering. It's not like he was a general. I mean, he offers specifically heat load, duct design, mechanical construction documents, and then went and hired a mechanical engineer to do, I mean, the scope only says three things: review loads and plans, sign and seal plans, full plumbing design. I don't know that M&P was in control of this. I mean, obviously, contractually, they were subject to what iEngineer decided, because they were the hiring entity for M&P. So, I mean, if Meritage had hired M&P, which was registered, and M&P had subbed out to iEngineer to draft, yes, that's perfectly fine. But this was a case where Meritage hired iEngineer to do the drawings, and then, which is an unregistered company without a registrant, they did the work and then had an engineer review it and seal it. So I do see the potential for M&P to have, you know, aiding and abetting, but I also think, in my mind, that iEngineer was practicing without a license, because, I mean, they drew the plans and just gave it to somebody else to stamp.
So I guess I'm having trouble following that logic, because I'm looking at the additional services order that describes the scope of work. And so if iEngineer is a drafting service, put the name aside because I do find that confusing, but let's put it like I said, if they're called iDrawHouses, they could sign this. They could be a drafting service that's drawing up house plans, and they are in an exempt category. And I don't see anything in here that leads me to believe that M&P just simply plan stamped this. It's got their logo on it. That's all purely speculative. For iEngineer to sign this ASO with a detailed scope of work, I write scopes of work to clients all the time and say, we are providing for your project structural engineering, mechanical engineering, plumbing, whatever, all the engineering services. That doesn't constitute me practicing engineering. It just says, we're going to provide those services. And then I hire engineers to do that. And I guess the way I read this is they've agreed to provide those services, and they hired M&P to do it. So that's the logic trail I'm following, because I don't find this anything much different, even though I'm a regulated professional and I would be practicing in a regulated environment. I just don't see it any different, because I'm describing the services I will provide.
I understand that part, but so we are okay with non-registrants being in responsible charge?
It's an exempt category.
If it's single family. I don't know that it is single family.
Well, Meritage Homes was the drawings I looked at for okay. Meritage were single family homes.
Okay. So,
I'll make a motion to dismiss case P18003.
Second.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. The only comment I'd like to make is, yes, if this is single family, there's no violation, but it seems like this business practice might have been applied to any other projects, and they've acknowledged to have done multifamily, so I don't think it's quite that simple, and I wish it would have gone to an EAC, so.
But do we have evidence that they did multifamily residences under their logo and issued drawings?
We don't, they've acknowledged that they've done multifamily. We don't know what those plans look like.
Well, can the investigator request for them to provide if they've done that? You know,
Mr. Kramer?
Let us see the documents.
There's 13 examples in the packet. Well, at least I downloaded 13 plans for multifamily plans.
Right. What I saw is that they were all after October of 16, which is when they merged with engineer inspectors. So at that point, it doesn't matter because they were a registered firm. This was the only one that I saw that was before that time, from 2014.
But this one is for a single-family residence.
Right.
So...
Well, it appears to be yes. So what we don't know is, did they do this multifamily as well or not?
I just feel that it's purely speculation on our part at this point.
With the evidence that we have from the staff, I think we need to recommend dismissal at this stage, unless we have other evidence to prove otherwise. Clearly, M&P Engineers is identified as the engineer of record. Their seal and their company logo is on the documents.
Right.
So there's no intent of I engineer to be their engineer of record.
Right, but they're, my concern would be if this is multifamily, they are offering engineering services.
Yes.
If. And the question is, they acknowledge they've done multifamily. Do we have records of their contractual agreement for the multifamily projects? And we don't. So I don't know that we have all the information. But I don't want to drag this on. All right. Right, Jason?
Right.
Okay. Let's vote on the motion. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Let's move on. 6B1. This is a case of, thank you, Mr. Kramer, Steve Fitzgerald, home inspector. And this is a complaint we received in October of this year. Computer screen went blank. Regarding an inspection in Mesa. The complaint was that he failed to accurately report on several items. We did have an EAC look at it, or assessors look at it, and they did not find any substantive violations, and instead are recommending a letter of concern for minor reporting violations.
I move that we dismiss with a letter of concern.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion to second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion passes. We do have several people here, so let's try to do those cases. So we'll move to 6D1. Case 6D1 is William Bixler, structural engineer. It's related to the Buffalo Chip Saloon project in Cave Creek. I think this is also the same case or the same project that's involved in 6C6. Is that right?
Correct.
Thank you. Mr. Hunt? So we... On March 15th, the board opened a complaint alleging respondent signed and sealed structural engineering plans that were prepared by Don Fredericks, an unregistered, not employed by the respondent, and by a non-registered firm on the Buffalo Chip Saloon in Cape Creek. I think staff has done their investigation. They have a proposed consent agreement that includes letter of reprimand, state suspension and probation, administrative penalty of $1,000, a cost of investigation of $169. I think, the argument is that, we'll have the discussion because they're all here. So, if you're here for this case, would you please identify yourselves?
My name is John Condi. I am counsel for Mr. Bixler.
Thank you.
Mr. Bixler.
Thank you. Is there anything you would like to say to the board today?
I think that the board lacks jurisdiction to proceed in the manner that it has proceeded. To give background, in March of 2018, my client received a letter that said that the board has received a complaint. And in the offer of, and we responded to the letter with a detailed explanation of why there was no violation. And later we received a draft consent agreement from Mr. Hunt, again setting forth that the board has received a complaint. And it turned out, and we wrote another letter identifying that there were several inaccuracies in the draft consent agreement, including misstatements with respect to things that I said in letters, and a number of other things, and the specific issue about whether there had been a complaint made against my client. The response to that was a new consent agreement that took out the misstatements that were attributed to my office. And for the first time, on June 11th, we heard that the board opened a complaint. I responded with another letter pointing out that the board's mandate and the board's statutory authorization does not include issuing its own complaints in the manner that has been done here. There's a specific statute which I cite. Which is ARS section 32-128E that provides an investigation may be initiated on receipt of an oral or written complaint. That did not occur here. The board, on its own motion, may direct the executive director to file a verified complaint charging a person with a violation of this chapter or board rules and shall give notice. And then it goes on to identify the notice that's required to be given, the fact that my client would have to be served with a verified complaint, which did not happen. And so therefore, this board, in the manner that this complaint has been instituted, lacks jurisdiction. And if you don't agree with that, there are three letters that detail in excruciating detail why there was no violation by my client. If you hark back to the discussion that you had about the iEngineer situation, that is the exact situation that we have here. We have Mr. Bixler, who has actually performed work on several of the Buffalo Chip Saloon projects in the past, and has performed work in the town of Cave Creek many times, and is familiar with what their requirements are, enters into a contract with Don Fredericks to perform structural engineering services. As part of that agreement, for payment of $1,000, Don Fredericks performs drafting services for Mr. Bixler. And Mr. Bixler performs all of the design, performs all of the calculations, stamps and seals, stamps and signs, therefore sealing the plans appropriately. And the allegation, which we still don't understand, is that somehow that results in assisting somebody in the unauthorized practice of engineering, which didn't occur here. Mr. Bixler did engineering. Don Fredericks did drafting. Don Fredericks was under the control of Mr. Bixler with respect to that work, and therefore there was no violation. We're happy to answer any questions.
Okay.
Does anybody have any questions? Mr. Donald, would you be willing to speak about the claim being made that the board can't initiate complaints?
I would be more than happy to provide legal advice if the board would like to an executive session. Absolutely.
Mr. Chair, I move we go into executive session.
Second.
Legal advice.
Thank you. We have a vote on that? Okay, let's go into executive session.
Was there an actual vote?
Oh, do we have to vote?
All right. All in favor of going to executive session?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. Let's go into executive session, please, for legal advice.
Does that mean we do?
Yes, please.
I didn't know.
No,
it's okay. Okay, thank you. We're back in session. So I did have a question on the case, specifically the contractual relationship between Mr. Bixler and Mr. Fredericks. My understanding of the statutes is that plans that you seal have to be prepared by you or a bona fide employee, or your bona fide employee, not by a third party. So, and the definition of bona fide employee includes several things, which I don't feel qualify in this case, except that one question I have is, did Mr. Bixler ever pay wages to Mr. Fredericks?
The contract was provided, and the contract provided that Mr. Fredericks was to receive $1,000 in compensation, and that was what was done.
So did he write a check for $1,000 to Mr. Fredericks? Or are you saying he gave him a discount of $1,000 for his services?
What's the answer to the question?
We did not write a check to him.
Okay.
We gave him a contract for $4,500. We told him if he did his own drafting, we would discount it $1,000 for a total fee of $3,500. We provided you with the invoices and everything showing we charged him $3,500.
Okay. And Mr. Bixler, who paid you?
Don Fredericks.
So there lies my concern, is the fact that Mr. Fredericks is not your bona fide employee, in my mind, because you don't meet the definition of a bona fide, or he doesn't meet the definition of a bona fide employee of Mr. Bixler.
I respectfully disagree, because the requirement was that, and I have the statute here somewhere, but I'm sure that you have it available too, but to paraphrase it, if Mr. Bixler performs engineering, the engineering service portion, and then it directs the other person, whether it is a drafting firm, which is something that there are many of in Arizona, or a contractor that provides drafting, and as long as he performs the engineering and directs and directly supervises the drafter, and the drafter is compensated, and there's no practical difference between my client writing a check for $4,500 or being given a check for $4,500 and then turning around and writing a check to Don Fredericks for $1,000. And so if that's the hang-up, that's a specious argument. I mean, from my perspective, I think that it doesn't, I mean, it never occurred to me that this was, since this was never raised, never identified specifically as an issue, I would be happy to provide the board with case law supporting what I just said, which is that if you're not required, not in this situation exactly, but in other situations where this argument has been made, that the requirement that you have to pass a check back and forth is unnecessary. And I know that it exists in the insurance context because that issue arises often.
Yeah, and here's my take on this whole thing. You have, I don't believe there's a violation at all. I agree that, I mean, I don't agree that we don't have the authority to file a violation. I don't agree with your argument on that. But in this case, you have different things. You have Don Fredericks, who's the general contractor for this, you know, the owner hires Don Fredericks as the general contractor for this Buffalo Chip Saloon. The general contractor hires Mr. Bixler to do the engineering services. Mr. Bixler then turns around and hires Don Fredericks, the drafter, and pays him out of the contract. So in that case, I see that Don Bixler, Fredericks, the drafter, is hired directly by Bixler, the engineer, to provide drafting services for his client, who is Fredericks, the general contractor. So you have two different things. I mean, if Fredericks wasn't the general contractor, then yeah, I'd say you can't have a drafter that hires the engineer, you know, because that would be an aid in pay. But he's the general contractor, and the general contractor can hire an engineer for the owner, because I would assume that Fredericks has a had a contractual obligation with the owner to be the general contractor. That's correct. He was the general contractor on this, right?
Correct.
So you have a general contractor that's hiring an engineer. You have an engineer that's hiring a drafter. The drafter and the general contractor happen to be the same company, but they're performing two different services. That's my take on it. I think this case should just be dismissed because I don't see that he did anything wrong. I think he did hire a bona fide employee in the drafting service. You know.
Is that a motion?
No. let me just add that I agree, but I think you've got a scope of work, and Frederick says, we'll do the drafting. So take it out of your contract. You just do the engineering, we'll take care of the drafting. And that's, again, I don't think there's any exchange or between the engineer and Frederick's.
But it's right in his contract that they'll give him a $1,000 discount for providing the drafting services.
Well, construction documents, construction administration, $4,500. CAD services provided by Don Fredericks, that's part of my construction documents and construction administration. So I need to take that out of that $4,500. So I've reduced the scope by taking the CAD services out. So my new scope now for the engineer is just the $3,500.
I know, but someone had to do the drafting.
Fredericks did. He did his own drafting.
I know, but he was hired by Bixler could have hired ABC Company to do the drafting for $1,000. Then this would have completely went away, right? I mean, if the general contractor hired Bixler to do the engineering, Bixler hired ABC Company to do the drafting for $1,000 and paid him a check for $1,000, this whole thing would go away, right? This wouldn't even be a case. What you got to look at it is, okay, so the contractor hired the engineer hired the drafting service, who happens to be the contractor, but it's a different service. He didn't give him a check, he just took it off the bill. If he would have wrote him a check, you know, for $4,500, and he would have turned around and wrote him a check for $1,000, it's silly.
Right.
It's the money flow thing goes the way it's supposed to go. It just happens to be that the general contractor who hired the engineer is also the drafting service.
My only question is one of who has the authority, okay?
Who's
it's
in
a question of authority. Who is in responsible charge? You cannot put Fredericks in responsible charge. He has a non-registered firm. He cannot produce drawings that he's responsible for. Someone else must be responsible for those drawings. So in responsible charge has to be Bixler. And that's where the ambiguity arises with the money flow as to who you beholden to, who you responsible to. I am not responsible to the draftsman. The draftsman should be responsible to me as a registrant.
Right, but he's not beholden to the draftsman. He's beholden to the general contractor who hired him. It's the same, but it's still a GC that hired the engineer. It's not a drafting company.
Jason, I'm 99% with you. I think you're right. But But my only concern is that exactly what Gene brought up is, how can you be in responsible charge when the GC, Frederick's the GC, can say, no, no, change those plans if you want to get paid as I drafted them? Well, it's a problem of being the same person.
But I don't believe there's anything in our statute that says it can't be.
Yeah.
And you know what? Right, as soon as he put a stamp on it, he took responsibility for it. If the general contractor goes to him and says, hey, change this, I don't want ADA bathrooms in my thing, and he stamps it, well, shame on him. Then that's not a contractual thing, or that's not what we're talking about. That would be an errors and omissions or a technical knowledge and skill issue. If he does that, then that would be a violation. You know, if the contractor told him to do it and said, hey, I'm not paying you, stamp this no matter what, and he does it, well, shame on him. But that's not what the case is here.
Could it have been, Jason? That's the premise. Could it have been?
Well, drawings that we're looking at, was the technical knowledge and skill ever brought up? I mean, was that ever an issue? What I'm seeing for this complaint? It is nothing with technical knowledge and skill. It is complete, aiding and abetting, which did not happen in this case.
And I kind of have to agree. I look at it, and I'm one of those is, my first question, and I asked it earlier, is how did the money flow? But then as you brought up some really good points, Jason, I look at it and I go, if Mr. Bixler had not put that credit in his proposal and just said it's $4,500, written a check back to Mr. Frederickson?
Frederick's.
We probably wouldn't even be here. And so it grays and muddies the waters a little bit because there's a credit instead of a check being written. But I agree with Jason. I don't see anything from a technical knowledge and skill. I see red lines being generated by the registrant who sealed these documents, and those red lines, from what I can tell, being picked up in subsequent submittals and everything being permitted fine and all of that. So I'm kind of leaning in that direction.
Me too, but the challenge with the credit is that you can always inflate a proposal and say, you can say something that's really $3,500, you can say it's $4,500 minus a $1,000 credit.
But that's speculative.
Right, but Mr. Frederick did the work. It's not like he just did nothing. I mean, he actually provided services that he got paid for. Like I said, if it wasn't the same person, if it was some other drafting company and this credit was on there, this wouldn't be a deal. This wouldn't be an issue. I mean, he's paying for services. He's paying directly for services. His service cost was $4,500. If he just did it all himself, he would have charged him $4,500. He would have done his own drafting. But he hired someone else to do the drafting, which is perfectly legal.
Which is perfectly legal. But I'm just saying that if I redline a drawer, I am the registrant, and I have comments on the drafting product, whether it's revision, it's field corrections, whatever it may be. When I redline it, and if those are not incorporated in the final product, I have to basically, be able to withhold my seal or the product is unsatisfactory. I have to have at least that degree of control over it.
Right, and he would. What? No one forced him to seal it. He does the red lines, he hands it back to the drafting service, who's the general contractor. The general contractor doesn't pick up the red lines, gives it back to him. He isn't forced to seal it. He could just say no. If he seals it, then he's accepted it. In this case,
would he still be paid? I don't know. I don't know how the contractual arrangements are.
He has a contract. Whether he gets paid or not, that's contractual. He has a contract. Okay. He did the services. Okay. He provided the services he was supposed to. The drafting company, which is the general contractor, provided the services he was supposed to. They were all paid by the general contractor, who would have been paid by the owner as it flowed through.
And I also don't see this as a case of where this contractor came to the respondent and said, hey, I have these drawings here, can you review and stamp them? I don't see that in the packet of evidence here. I find nothing to say that they, which is how we see a lot of aiding and abetting. People draw stuff up, mm-hmm. and they go, hey, you know, I'll give you a couple hundred bucks if you review this and seal it. And I don't see this. I think the, again, it's a little bit of a gray area on the compensation part of it, but I think, I guess what I'm seeing is grounds for dismissal, in my opinion.
Okay. And I'll make a motion to dismiss the P18056 Bitzler.
No, second. Okay, is there any more discussion on this item? Mr. Parlin, did you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm just not sure how we get past the fact that we've got a non-registered firm displaying sealed professional documents on a commercial project. Because we deal with this from time to time.
And just to go along with that, this case was board directed to investigate based on a case back in July of last year. Mr. Green, the architect, violations were the same. Board found it to be true that he was aided and embedded to practice, unregistered practice, and that the compensation, that he was not a bona fide employee. In this case, I think it's sketchy the way that went about, but we didn't find violation of that. We found that he did aid and abet based on the board's previous finding of Mr. Green, the architect, on the exact same project, for doing the exact same thing. Stamping plans for an unregistered firm, unregistered practice.
Okay, Mr. Hunt. Yes, sir.
That's inaccurate. The violation was because Mr. Green stamped a mechanical drawing. Mr. Green is an architect.
I have a copy of the consent agreement right here, listed all the violations. One of those is aiding and abetting, stamping plans not done by a bona fide employee, along with stamping mechanical plans.
Respectfully, that case has nothing to do with the facts that are alleged against my client here. My client, if we're going to something where you're addressing something that the board didn't discuss before, but I guess it's the subject of Mr. Hunt's disagreement, the only other thing that I'm aware of is that there was some kind of problem with the information that's in, what's it called? Title block. And we pointed out in our multiple letters that there is not a uniform rule with respect to the information that is obtained on a title block. You know, my client, I don't know what Tyler Green did with Don Fredericks. I know, and I provided evidence to support that my client performed engineering services. We provided you with, provided the
calculations.
Board with, I don't know, hundreds of pages of calculations. We provided copies of red lines, of plan sheets. We identified we provided contemporaneous documents showing that there were meetings, several meetings between my client and Don Fredericks, where the subject was Mr. Fredericks drafting coming into conformance with my client's design intent, all of which supports that Mr. Fredericks, in this instance, was a bona fide employee who was, as it's set forth in the statute, and to support that my client performed the design services, and Mr. Fredericks performed drafting, and that he was compensated for it, all in conformance with the statutory requirements. There's not a statute that my client violated in this case. There may be gray areas, it may be preferable that the general contractor also not be the drafter, but you know, preferences don't give rise to a finding that a registrant has violated a rule, and it's completely there is no support for it.
Okay. Unless anybody else at the board has anything to say, we'll move forward and take a vote. All right. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Opposed.
Okay. We have, one nay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's an interesting case.
Where is the delineation between like a multifamily and a single family?
Three units. You go up to three units without them.
All right.
Where do you find that?
We'll move to case 6D2. Well, it thinks about the statute. 6D2 is John Bell, certified home inspector, 51003. This is related to an inspection in Glendale. We have a proposed consent agreement. And I believe there's people here on this case. Mr. Bell might be here.
I am here.
Thank you. And Mr. Martinez?
I'm here.
Okay, thank you. If you guys would like to address the board, would you please come up? If you don't want to address the board and just want to be present, that's okay as well.
Mr. Martinez is here. Just if you have any questions for
him. Okay. Thank you. So this was an issue about failing to report on roof tiles, eaves, laundry room frames, non-functioning outlet, leaky hose bib, and other items for that inspection. Mesa, we have the details of the investigation. Conclusion was that the respondent violated board rules and that it failed to conduct the inspection in accordance with standards. And then the proposed consent agreement includes letter of reprimand, restitution of $360, remedial training, administrative penalty of $500, and it has a cost of investigation of
$6,230.30.
It's a typo. It's a typo?
Okay.
I can't.
In the consent. It's
in the consent.
I can't read the consent. Can you read the consent?
I brought it up in Acrobat. So
do you want this computer?
No, that's fine. I believe you guys in this case. Okay. So that's what we have for this case. Is there anything that we should know or that we, Mr. Bell, that you'd like to tell the board?
After having my attorney look at the consent agreement. Do you have a copy of what he proposed?
Let me...
It's your job to present it to you.
Yeah, if you'd like to discuss, I don't see it.
I didn't see something.
Did we get
anything on this? Did we get a secondary?
It was in part of our negotiation on the consent agreement, and we advised Mr. Bell to present his request from his attorney to you today.
I guess, Mr. Bell, if there's any terms of the consent that you'd like to modify, I think we'd like to understand why. I mean, we see letter of reprimand, restitution, remedial training, and a small administrative penalty. So
it's pretty simple. I agreed to the terms of the consent agreement.
Okay.
With the exception of... This kind of seems like a confession to me. I don't agree with some of the findings from the EC.
Okay.
Okay. I'm willing to go through with all of the steps that are proposed.
Okay.
There's a bunch of things that I've found that I lacking in my report that don't really reflect how the inspection was performed. Do I need to adjust my report? Absolutely, I have done that. I did it before the meeting with the EC with the enforcement. However, to say that I didn't observe it is just not a fact.
Okay.
Things like polarity and outlets. Of course I checked. Do I say polarity is good? I didn't at that point. I do now. If there was something that wasn't grounded or miswired, I definitely reported it. Same with faucets. A bunch of things in here I don't agree with. I guess I'm just, where I'm at is I'm making a business decision to sign the consent form. But I'm by no means admitting to all of these findings. I will follow all the steps that you put our outline.
Right. So I appreciate you being candid and, you know, being here in front of the board. I will tell you, and I'll take direction from staff, the hardest thing to change in a consent agreement would be actually the findings of fact, because that went through the whole process of having a committee of home inspectors and other, you know, qualified people to determine what they thought were the violations. So for us to come and strike findings of facts, there would have to be a very good reason for us to do that.
And the point of having in the standards of practice of having where you say what you observed and say what the condition is for this very fact. You know, you said, well, I looked at the outlets, but you didn't. But into the report, you didn't say you looked at the outlets. So an independent person doesn't know. You know, that's why the reporting rules are the way they are, and that's why you're changing them, because you know that's. But that's the reason. If you're walking the house with the homeowner afterwards, you know, or during the investigation, so you know they know what you looked at. But a separate independent person doesn't, and that's why the standard practice rules are the way they are. You know, you have to say, I looked at this, and it's good or bad. You know, but you do have to say that you at least looked at it or checked the box that you looked at it, so that an independent person can look at it and go, okay, he did look at this. He didn't say anything was wrong. The assumption is, you know, it's right. But at least it says you looked at it. So, and you know, I'm glad you changed your, you know, I'm glad you changed your rules, or, you know, you changed your reporting. But the findings of fact, like Dr. Angel was saying, from a third-party person looking at it, it's, you know, the findings of fact are you did not report on these things. You may have looked at them, but you didn't report on them, and that's where the problem comes in.
Well, I understand and I agree with you, and I can go back to 8 years of reports where I did report on, because there was something wrong with the file.
Right.
There was something wrong with the outlet, and it changed my report.
Right.
I fully understand that.
And that's the reason for it.
So, I mean, yeah, I think in my mind, and I guess I'll need somebody to make a motion, I think for your collaboration and being, you know, forthcoming, I don't have a problem with making reductions in some of the penalties for some of the other stuff. I think the findings of fact would have to stay and the restitution would have to stay. Yes, Mr. Bell.
One more thing to say. In lieu of... Sorry, what the gentleman was talking about there, I don't know.
Mr. Madison?
In lieu of a third party, I intend to do a report writing, of course. I intended to do that all along.
Thank you.
I spoke to Jeff about that. He said it's a good idea to wait for the board.
Thank you.
I'm after that anyway.
Appreciate it. Any additional discussion or motions from the board?
I guess remedial training, I guess I do have a question about that. What exactly is that?
Report writing?
Well, part of the consent agreement is remedial training, so I just kind of want to know what...
in report writing.
It says remedial training, report writing.
Okay.
We itemize the home inspector report writing, of course.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Okay.
Chairman, I move that we accept the staff recommendation.
Okay.
For 62, which
okay.
is Mr. Bell.
So we offered the proposed consent agreement.
Letter of reprimand, restitution of inspection fee, remedial training, administrative penalty in the amount of $500, and the cost of investigation in the amount of
$623.
Okay. I'll second.
Thank you. Do you want to add anything that if it's not signed, take any other action, or?
Sure.
Okay. What do you want to add?
30 days.
Okay. So you provide 30 days for a go to hearing. Okay. Okay. We have a motion and a second. Is there any, let's vote. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Opposed? Mr. Bell, thank you. That's it. I mean, see, the consent agreement that you saw will be offered to you, and you have 30 days to think about it. You can choose to either sign it, or you can decide to move forward to hearing.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bell. We'll go to item 6D3, the case of Mr. David Roman. It's a call-in.
Hello?
Hello, is this Dave Roman?
No, who's calling?
Kurt Winter, the Arizona Board of Technical Registration.
Oh, okay, I guess it is. I thought our call was on 28th, I'm sorry.
No worries. Are you available to speak?
I thought you were a telemarketer.
That's okay. Are you available, Mr. Roman, to have this discussion now?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. This is Alejandro Angel. I'm the chairman of the Board of Technical Registration. So we're addressing item 6D3 in our agenda. Respondent is Dave Roman of in the alarm business is Security Systems, Inc., doing business as Safeguard America and Safe Home Security. This is regarding two alarm system installations in Apache Junction and Glendale.
Yes.
Board has already taken action with one of the people involved in that sale. And what we have at this point is a conclusion from staff that the respondent and its alarm business violated statutes 32.121, 122.05, and 141A, in that the alarm business conducted activities without alarm business registration. So the board is offering a consent agreement that includes assurance of discontinuance, civil penalty of $1,000, and cost of investigation of $451. Mr. Roman, is there anything you'd like to say to the board?
Well, I think my attorney has been trying to discuss this with the board or someone on the board. Yeah. Our understanding, and I understand that ignorance is not an excuse, but the installations that were completed in your state on our behalf were done by other companies who were supposedly licensed or told us they were licensed. We had a license. We were at no time did we realize that there was a company license. And we since have applied for that license. And I think my feeling is we're fine with paying some type of fine and then making sure that we're properly licensed for the future. The consent agreement that was reviewed by our attorney, he had some issues with that. And that's what he's been trying to discuss. So we're not... We have no issue with becoming compliant. We have, according to your interpretation of the law, we understand why you think we violated the law. And we are moving to become compliant as quickly as we can. He was not comfortable with the language of the consent agreement and is advising not to sign it unless we can change some things in it. So that's, I think, the point we're at.
Thank you, Mr. Roman. Are you aware of what the specific items he's not comfortable with in the consent agreement?
I'm not. I'm not an attorney. I thought this call was 2 days from now, but if I knew it was today, I would have had him on the call. So I could certainly have him reach out to someone if you give me a name and phone number, discuss it, but we're a... large company. We thought we were in compliance. We don't do a lot of business in Arizona, but we do a business with essentially outside dealers who are required to have their own licenses, and for the most part, they would also service the customers. We really just bill. We don't have our own central station. We purchase contracts and then bill the customers, and that, especially in Arizona, we have no employees. We have been simply subbing out the service to other licensed companies, and the accounts that were in question were, to my knowledge, created by a licensed company. So we were totally unaware of this license requirement for us to be licensed, because we viewed ourselves as not even an operating company, but we did have the alarm license. So when it came to our knowledge that we needed this, we began quickly completing everything, and I think all of the items that were required have been submitted for the application. So he had some concerns about the agreement. I'm not sure what they were, but I just want to say blanketly that we do not want to be out of compliance. We're moving to be in compliance, and we certainly understand your view and your interpretation. We have no issue paying a fine and moving on, but again, I'm not the attorney. I'm not sure what his issues were.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Roman. I guess I'd like to hear from the board what they'd like to do. We had this case on the May agenda, and we pushed it to this month to hear from the respondent. We've had that. I think it's up to the board.
Messages. The attorney, Joe LaPerry, left some messages with people, and he's not heard back. So
I don't think...
He hasn't.
Staff is saying they have not received the messages, so you might want to double-check that they're calling the right place, Mr. Roman.
Okay, well, if you tell me who he should be calling, I'll make sure he does. But I spoke to him this morning and asked him, and he said that he's still waiting for it to hear back.
Okay, all the information should be in the notice that you received from the board. Okay. With that in mind, though, what would the board like to do?
I'm inclined to offer the agreement as it's written, and if the attorney has concerns, he can respond back to us in writing instead of relying on a phone call.
Are you making a motion?
I so move.
Okay, so there's a motion to
offer the consent agreement, assurance of discontinuance, civil penalty in the amount of $1,000, cost of investigation in the amount of $451. If not signed within 30 days, proceed to hearing.
Okay, we have a motion to offer the consent agreement. Do we have a second?
I'll second that, Chair.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Thank you, Mr. Gilmore. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. So, Mr. Roman, where we're at is you will receive the consent agreement formally from the board. You'll have 30 days to either sign it, or if you decline to sign it, we can move to a formal hearing. So, we appreciate you taking time today, and appreciate you trying to get into compliance.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye. Do you need a break? Or are you gonna... we also have people here for 6E1. Laura, stay there. This is your case, too. Robert Bauer, certified home inspector. 6983. This is a Peace of Mind Home Inspections. And we receive a request from the respondent to reconsider the April decision to offer the attached consent agreement. So the consent agreement that we had offered, pull it up. Can't read it, but it's there. Okay. It was a letter of reprimand, state suspension, peer review, remedial training, administrative penalty of $1,000, and $537 of investigation. So, would you please state your name for the record, sir?
Robert Bauer, Peace of Mind Home Inspection, LLC.
Thank you, Mr. Bauer. Is there anything you'd like, you're asking for reconsideration. Would you like to tell us why we should reconsider?
Well, I provided a note to Orlean, and I'm not sure if you have that.
Yeah,
the last time I was here was in April, and we made a conference call to Mr. John David. And it was in regards to the restitution. And that's about where we stopped as far as that meeting. When I received the next consent, the restitution was removed, but everything else was still there. And I received no notice or documentation as to what happened to the restitution. And I needed that not only for myself, but for my E&O, for my insurance, so they can then close the claim.
Mm-hmm.
Orlean advised or said that because the case was still open, that that was not submitted or sent out. So I'm in agreement with some, and I found and I provided, I had a home inspection report in April, which I left at the desk, I believe, or may receive. So, as we go down the list of the 11 points, I'm just here to see if what I suggest or what we can agree upon, and then if we can go from there. It just seems like it never got clarified in April.
Okay.
And if I'm out, if this is not the right venue, or if there is somewhere else this should take place.
No, I think this is the right venue. I guess one question for staff, Ms. Laura, do you know why we removed the restitution?
You spoke with the alleger. He was, there was a part in your packet that said he went to small claims court. They didn't find anything, and so
right.
As the board decided.
That's right.
We didn't feel we could.
That's right. Assess. That makes sense. Okay. I mean, so in terms of your reconsideration, you asked that we remove the state suspension and probation because you say that's already been accomplished. I think the opinion of the board is, my opinion is different, is that this is necessary. Given that we just found a violation, we want to make sure that you are in compliance. And so the state suspension and probation doesn't mean you can't practice. It just means that you can't get in trouble again with another violation. So that's why that's in there. Peer review, once again, you say that your reports are now in compliance with the board?
Based on what I provided, I went back on my records. I've done 7 home inspections since the first of the year. The last one I did was in April, which was in order to show that I was in compliance. When I initially was here with the inspectors that did the evaluation, it was brought up that there was like 38 points. And it was my program. It wasn't that it wasn't acceptable, it just wasn't noted that it was acceptable. So once I talked to my systems program, there's a box that I switched, and I believe I agreed even in that meeting that I knew what it was and I knew what had happened. It wasn't that it wasn't there. It wasn't in writing, but it was that I had, it was acceptable. It just didn't note that it was acceptable.
Okay. So I guess there's the peer review and the remedial training. I would tell you my opinion, we need one of those to know that you have come up to standard. I personally don't think we need both peer review and remedial training. And in fact, I think peer review would be better to know that you're doing things correctly, and if you are, then there's no need for training or anything else. And then once you move past that, there's the administrative penalty, the cost of investigation, and all the other items you noted from 7 to 11 are standard language just to make sure you stay in compliance.
Understood.
So in my mind, the one thing that I could see changing is the need for remedial training.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't know what other board members think.
So, in for clarification, I guess my problem with the home inspection report writing is it goes back to even class participation for my 80 plus hours. Then I did 30 parallels, and I was never shown a completed home inspection report. So the only time I actually got one is when I bought my house and I had a home inspection. So primarily I gleaned that report into my report. So when I was here initially, Dave Schwartz even agreed. My question is, how can that be that I'm being brought in for a report I didn't know was wrong?
Well, you should have known, because, I mean, when you become certified, you're supposed to have read all the standards that we have.
Correct. Which
so I don't understand. That point I don't understand. And if you did 30 parallel...
Well, I was never physically shown the right or the wrong, because I was never allowed to see, even with 30 parallels, even in class, because of the privacy issue. And I don't give my reports to no one but the client.
I think it's your responsibility to understand the regulations, Mr. Bauer, in that sense.
I understand that.
Okay.
Right, and on the website is the standards practice.
Which, because of some of the paperwork that I had to submit, and that would be my report checklist supplement that you probably have. Everything that you're requesting was in my report. Again, it goes back to whether I noted it as acceptable, marginal, or defective. And it was brought up that primarily my report was written as what's wrong, which, yeah, I guess that's what I'm thinking my client would like to know, is what's wrong. So, again, it goes back to, I don't want to say it was a computer glitch, but I'm not...
Well, that's why we're recommending...
missing.
That's why we're recommending a peer review, just to make sure that others can look over your work and make sure that it's correct. That's the intent of that item. So you'll have another set of eyes in your reports.
And I believe the peer review on this could just, I mean, I don't think he needs to have someone go out on the inspections with them. I think it's just, you know, have someone look at, and we could even say, you know, look at a report, a recently done report, and, you know, verify it meets the standard of practice.
Which is what I did in April. I actually had it here with me on in April, and I left it for me that when I left that meeting. And if it is wrong at that point, then certainly I would take your recommendation into consideration.
Right. And that's a reason for the peer review. Right. Just to look at it, just to make sure that
there is one here, I just don't know. I could even provide it. Okay. I believe you should have one here.
Do we need 5 peer reviews? That's what's in the consent agreement right now.
I think that's probably excessive.
I think it is too. I'm looking at it because you can't get compensated for any of them, and I'm thinking five's
quite a lot.
A few.
Yeah. And I don't think it needs to be where he needs to tag along with someone else. I think he needs peer review of his report to make sure it's in compliance.
Correct.
It sounds like it was a computer thing.
Yeah.
But you know, so I think we can very narrow the peer review down. Say, you know, peer review of a recently completed report.
About 3 days, yeah. just for completeness, because I think the one thing that gives me pause is Mr. Bauer's claim that, well, how was I supposed to know? Maybe there's other stuff he doesn't know yet.
Right.
So I just want to make sure that he's...
But he sat through an EAC, too, and I think those are pretty helpful. You know,
Without a doubt.
I assume with the EAC they told you everything that was wrong and why it was wrong. Yeah. Those are, you know, they're very helpful.
There's 3 people that...
That's the remedial training.
Yeah, right there. Okay.
So, you know, remedial training, I don't see any reason to keep that in there. That, you know, seems redundant. And I mean, I would even be inclined to even lower the administrative penalty to 500 if, you know, if everyone felt that was necessary, and, you know.
Are you making a motion, Jason, or is this sort of musing? Okay.
Let's make a motion. Hold on, let me find out what the actual thing was. So I'll make a motion to offer consent agreements letter reprimand, state suspension, probation, peer review of three recently completed reports for report compliance, administrative penalty in the amount of $500, and cost of investigation in the amount of $537. Not signed within 30 days, formal hearing.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor of the proposed consent or offering?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. Mr. Bauer, so you'll have 30 days to review the report and, or the agreement and sign
so
it.
So the one I provided in April would be sufficient for now, or you're saying three from?
No.
Your next three home inspections, we would like to have somebody review them after you conduct them to make sure your reports are in compliance.
And they have to be within 30 days, or?
No.
I had, because of what's going on, I have pulled back. Like, I've done only seven since the first of. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Bauer.
Okay, thank you. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Is there anybody else in the audience that's here for a case so we can take that first?
Mr. Olson is here.
Oh, Mr. Olson? Okay. Well, then let's move to Mr. Olson's case. Item 62 on the agenda, case P18054 and P18058.
Mr. Chair, I need to recuse on these. Thank you.
Please do. Respondent is James Olson, R.A., and at the May meeting, we offered a consent agreement with letter of reprimand, state revocation, payment to collaborating professional, administrative penalty, and cost of investigation. I believe Mr. Olson has signed a consent agreement?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Is there any discussion from the board?
Chair, I move that we accept the respondent's signed consent agreement.
Second. Okay. We have a motion to second. Any discussion? My only question is, were the terms for the payment to the collaborating professional discussed with the collaborating professional? Or,
it's within 30 days on the incentive agreement. And I just saw Mr. Bixler. He said it'd be the next week to 10 days.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes. Thank you, Mr.
That's the same thing.
Yeah. What's that?
Mm-hmm. Same big sort.
Yeah. One good one, one bad. Do you need a break?
I need.
Okay.
I'm ready. Through the gavel.
I'm ready for
break. All right. We will take a 10-minute break. Be back at 10:45, please. We're back in session. We're going to move to the signed consent agreements, C1 through C6. We might want to consolidate some of these. Are there any that you want to take out? Anybody would like taken out of a consent?
I think we need to take out C6 and have a discussion on it, since it kind of tied in with that other one. Although, I mean, I think the big thing with that one is going to be having to change kind of consent with some of the names and stuff that are in it, potentially.
Okay, so let's take out C6. I also would like to take out C1. But is there anything else? If not, we could consolidate 2 through 5.
We've done 2 already.
Oh, 3 through 5.
Mr. Chair, I move to consent item C3, C4, C5, and accept the signed consent agreements.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Any opposed? All right. So we have, we're offering all those consent agreements. Let's go back to 6C1. This is John Lunt with JL Automation, and it's with alarm system monitoring at Sunshine Plants in Chandler. We had offered a consent agreement, but what they did is I think they modified the consent and signed a modified consent.
Yeah, they asked for a reduction in the civil penalty, so we did that. They signed, or Mr. Lunt signed, that took the for you today.
Okay.
What was the original civil penalty?
I'm sorry?
What was the original penalty?
We had a proposed consent agreement worth $1,000.
Okay.
So is that part of the negotiation?
Yeah, we had a settlement conference.
Okay.
I have a question, Mr. Chair. In my review of this, the only question that comes to my mind is this the only instance of this violation? I mean it's singular. Did you do an investigation and ask if they had done any other installations or...
this is the only one that was brought to our attention.
I understand that, but they didn't...
We asked during the settlement conference, but he indicated that he wasn't going to respond per his attorney's advice.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, my concern is that from reading the record, this person was very uncooperative throughout the investigation and not forthcoming, bringing information, not responding to the board and all those things. And that hardly seems like it should be a case where we reduce the penalty.
I agree. We should go in the other direction to assume that there were other instances and actually increase the penalty rather than decrease.
Yeah, but we can't really assume other problems. That's
no, but given on the one, even with the one we have, we can assess some. I mean, this is a pretty lenient penalty that I would think would be for someone who did things in good faith and who was helpful, but somebody who, you know, presents the opposite. I don't know that we should be so lenient.
But they negotiated a compromise, basically. That was signed.
But we don't have to accept it, apparently.
We don't have to accept it.
I know, burn the hand.
Change. Yeah, but it doesn't put these guys in good position.
What did you say, Jason?
I said burn the hand. $500 in the hand is better than $1,000 in the bush.
Yeah, to me it's more about the principle than the money. $500 or $1,000 is not going to make the board rich or poor.
Well, you still have a violation. So for aggravation, if he comes before you again, you have that, this signed consent. Just food for thought.
The assurance of discontinuance means if we find another violation comes up, it could come back to you as a violation of the board order. It wouldn't close the door.
Right, but if we didn't sign and he didn't want to sign the consent agreement, we have a fairly clear case if we go to hearing as well.
Mm-hmm. I guess I have a question for staff, if I understand this process right. Staff had a negotiation with the respondent, is that correct?
Correct.
And I'm just curious when I ask this, but you came up with an initial amount of a penalty. Why would you feel flexible about that amount? I mean, why wouldn't your first amount be something that you felt was fixed or accurate?
Yeah, so at the settlement conference, we didn't change anything. We later, the attorney and I later exchanged emails where he offered the reduced civil penalty of $500. We thought to bring it to the board to see if you would agree or not. If not,
I see. This is merely his offer. This wasn't anything you guys initiated. Okay, that makes good
Mr.
sense.
Mr. Parlin?
We do make it real clear when we negotiate that. the board has to accept this, and in fact, in a case like this, we tell them it's likely that they might not accept it.
Well, I think it just highlights, now that I understand it, highlights the accuracy that you put into the assessment of the penalty. I mean, you guys probably got it right in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So, good work.
But they came back from $6,000 to $500. That was their offer?
It was, I believe, $1,000.
$1,000.
Yeah,
$1,000
for one instance. The what?
$1,000.
So the original offer was for $1,000. They came back with $500.
So it's not much money. It's just, how do we want to address it?
Well, I think you brought it up initially, Chair. Had they had responded in a cooperative way?
Well, they did the wrong one. Sorry.
And they did apparently avoid any kind of communication. I think we should stick with the original.
Yeah.
Had they cooperated, I think I would have been more receptive to reducing it. But the fact they kind of avoided communicating with staff and were uncooperative, I think we should stick with the original assessment.
I agree.
Was this just one case? I mean, one alarm install?
That's the only one that we're made aware of.
So I think what you said, Ms. Laura, that you asked about whether there were others, and he was, and he said his attorneys advised him not to respond?
Correct.
Not to respond.
Well, I mean, that would make sense, but right now we have one case that we know about.
Yep.
And he's had his business since 2006.
Stick it to him.
Well, we still have one case that we know about.
Yeah.
There's one case that's out there. I mean, if the guy was nice as peaches and everything else, would it be $500? I mean, are we assessing the guy a higher penalty just because he was a jerk, for lack of a better word?
We're not collaborating.
That's where I pull back on staff. Well, I think staff got it right the first time, and I think we stick with that number. You know, I think there was some... I don't know where the reduction came from. Their attorney, I guess. So,
what precedent if someone else came forward? I mean, is that the statement for what? This is a question for staff. Is that $1,000 what it always is when there's an alarm? If it's a single alarm violation, is the standard $1,000 right off the bat? Typically,
not necessarily. I mean, the other one you looked at, we had evidence of two violations, so that was $1,000.
Right.
But doesn't it depend also on the circumstances? I mean, is it somebody who really didn't know that he was supposed to be registered and, you know, made an honest mistake versus somebody who has not been in that boat? I mean, I think...
Well, I'm still just trying to
intent,
be fair across the
board. Intent place on it and a lot of other things.
I guess my question is, what was the attorney's justification for lowering it? I mean, it's a first offense. It's, you know, I mean, why, you know, or did he just go, oh, that's too high?
Yeah, so they indicated that $500 would be reasonable since the respondent was going to be registered with the firm as an alarm agent, as a controlling person. But as of, I checked yesterday, there's no application.
Whoa.
There you go.
Thanks. I've gotten right on it.
I move that we reoffer the original consent and reject the offer from the respondent's attorney.
And what's our penalty?
$1,000 penalty.
In 30 days?
Move to hearing?
Yeah. If not signed in 30 days, move to hearing.
Was part of it that they had to be registered at the board too?
Well, it's assurance of discontinuance until such time they become registered. So we're not stipulating that they're registered.
Okay.
They just can't do what they're doing until they are.
Yep.
And we know at this point in time they're not. Okay.
Right.
So we'll see.
I'll second.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Motion passes. Thank you. 6C6. Case P18055, Don Fredericks, and this is in relation to the Buffalo Chip Saloon project. We heard some items relevant to this case when we talked about 6D1 with Mr. Bixler. We do have a signed consent from Mr. Fredericks. What we concluded was that the respondent practiced architecture engineering without registration with the board, and that the firm practiced or offers to practice a board-regulated profession without registration. Penalties include discontinuance, $2,000 penalty, and $154 for investigation.
Okay. One thing, I wish we would have had that Green case, and I wish they would have all came at the same time, because, you know, this Green case, what, that was several months ago. You know, it would have been nice to have all these three at the same time, since they were all joined at the hip. But I guess the question with this one goes back to the same one we had before. Now, we know with Bixler, he had a contract that cycled back through, so... You know, that's why, you know, we decided that he wasn't at fault for aiding and abetting, because he showed the money path, how it went. Mr. Green, I don't recall that, or I don't remember if that was the case, if he had a contract and all that as well. So with this one, I guess the question becomes, the whole issue, the crux of this is that he has drawings that were on his title block, and he's a non-registered firm. Is that kind of the understanding with this?
He's a non-registered firm, and he used title block. I mean, but yeah, to me, the biggest question is, was he a bona fide employee of the two registrants?
Well, we know he was. We know he was at the Bixler one.
Right.
Because we had a contract that showed that. You know,
we sort of do, yes.
So.
At least that's what was decided today. That was our decision today.
And our decision in the Green case was that Green was aiding and abetting.
Because they didn't have the same relationship.
At the very least, as I look at this, we need to pull any references to the Bixler component of this out of the consent agreement, and most likely adjust the civil penalty, because we reduced the violations from 2 to 1, maybe? I'm thinking out loud here.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if we need to, I mean, like the findings of fact, I mean, like number four, you know, respondent produced professional documents, blah, 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 with the title block respondent firm displaying the signature, that's a fact. I mean, you know,
that is
a fact. I mean, he did do that.
But if you go to like 8 and 9, it says that provided professional service of architecture and engineering.
Right.
We might want to cross out engineering based on what we decided earlier.
Exactly. Yeah. I think it, you know, this... The findings of fact and everything are going to have to be gone through this and reworked. You know, the other problem I have with this one is, once again, is if it was, you have two entities, you have the general contractor entity and you have a drafting entity. Is this title block the general contractor title block? I mean, ABC Construction had a set of drawings. I mean, that's weird. I mean, but is it?
So do we know that he's an ROC, he's registered with the ROC, this firm? I mean, is he really a general contractor?
What's that?
Is Mr. Fredericks, building by Fredericks, a contractor?
I couldn't answer that. That wasn't the...
Yeah, I understand.
That wasn't the scope of our investigation.
I understand.
I mean, per the contracts and stuff in the other one, he was stated himself to be the general contractor. You know, if he's licensed or not. I mean, it is weird to have a general contractor have a title block. You know, that's kind of a weird thing on this. I just think the, you know, findings of fact maybe need to be reworked a little bit on this one, based on the decision we made on Bixler. And yeah, if the administrative penalty wanted to get reduced, you know, to half, because you had half the problem.
So are you suggesting that maybe we, you know, reoffer, or, well, he already signed it, but that we create a new consent agreement that remove references to engineering and Bixler on the findings of fact, and then on the conclusions and penalty, we rework the penalty?
Reduce the penalty to 1,000.
I mean, all we had was, assurance of discontinuance would remain.
Cost of investigation is the
same. Cost of investigation is the same, yeah. The civil penalty could go from $2,000 to $1,000.
Yeah. So I guess we have to reject this signed consent agreement, have staff rework, and then present it again next meeting. I'll make that motion.
They could just offer it to the respondent. Yeah, have them sign it, and we can adopt it at the next meeting.
Yeah, well, it's going to have to come back.
Yeah. True.
Well, does it? It doesn't have to come back. Can we just say that under those conditions that we specified, if he signs it, we'll approve it?
I don't know. Scott, what do you think? Should it come back? If we offer us a different consent agreement and he signs it, should it come back before the board to approve it, or can we just make the stipulation that it is approved if these changes are made?
Best practice is always going to be for the board to have a final document to look at before signing.
Okay.
Just to make sure there are no errors.
Okay. That'll be the motion then. Reject this signed consent agreement, have staff rework the new consent agreement and offer it and signed or reviewed. I mean, we can either, I think he can sign it and then we can review it at the next meeting. It doesn't have to come back for review and then for, I don't think
right.
We need to pass
yeah,
that
Yeah, he
along.
Can sign it.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Second.
We have a motion to second. So my understanding is redraft the consent agreement, removing any references to engineering and Bixler and the findings of fact, and reducing the civil penalty to $1,000, right?
Yes.
That's the motion.
Everything else stays the same.
Okay.
Were those references to engineering part of the original complaint?
I believe so.
And did we take note? We took care of it basically on this other case?
I think we concluded that the engineering was done properly. I mean, the board concluded that.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So, just for clarification, for conclusions, is the board saying that the respondent firm did not practice or offer to practice engineering and architecture?
I think we're saying that they practice architecture, but not engineering.
So, building by Don Fredericks is considered an engineering firm?
No, this is a long discussion, Mr. Hunt, but I think what we're saying is that because Mr. Bixler paid indirectly, or had the way the bona fide employee works, it says a bona fide employee is a bunch of conditions, or someone you give wages to, or someone that you provide contract compensation to. And I think by having that $1,000 in his contract, he provided contract compensation to Mr. Fredericks.
I understand. I just want to make a good clarification on the respondent firm itself.
They cannot practice engineering. Yeah, they cannot practice engineering. We just didn't think that they practiced engineering in this case.
Even with sealed congressional documents.
Right.
Yeah.
Just hiring as a drafter.
I think for future cases.
Yeah. Yes. But I don't think that went with the Green case because I don't think they have that contractual They didn't. I don't believe they did the contracts the proper way.
And I don't think this is a blanket decision either. In my mind, this is specific to this case. There might be other cases where, and here's why I think the last case, and I'm not excited about that other case. But one, they were paying contract compensation to Mr. Fredericks, and two, it wasn't just $500 to seal the plant; so it was several thousand dollars. It leads me to believe that he was actually doing the work, and we had red lines to show that he was directing the work, Mr. Bixler.
Well, and I also believe the big thing with the last one was you had a GC that hired the engineer that hired the drafter who happened to be a GC. It wasn't just a drafting company. He was actually...
But if a drafting company hired an engineer, then that would be an issue.
Right.
Even if then they decided to put some compensation in the contract, the question would be, who's in responsible charge of this? Who's directing the work?
Exactly.
Like in this case, we were satisfied that Mr. Bixler was directing the work.
Yeah. I don't see any problem with
Jason was anyway.
Yeah. I don't see any problem with the general contractor hiring an engineer and then the engineer hiring a drafting service regardless of who it is, which I think was the case in this one. I don't think if you're a drafting company and you hire an engineer and then they try to pay you back, no. I mean, because you have you don't really have a contractual obligation up the chain. I mean, you're not really, I'd say, qualified or, you know, authorized to hire an engineer.
It gets murky, though, even in this case, just because it's the same person above you and below you.
Right.
So, you know.
But it's a company that does two different things. So, I don't know. This one I think was pretty clear-cut. But, yeah, I don't think this should just be a blanket policy. I think each one of them has to be looked at very carefully.
So I would continue to approach cases the same way you have, this case notwithstanding. Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Hunt. Have we voted on this?
No, we have not.
Okay. We have a motion and a second in this case, and so to answer your question, Mr. Hunt, in investigative conclusions, we also need to remove the reference to engineering. So, we have a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, motion passes. Seven A. This was Jason's case. He had an application for waiver of the PE and registration as a civil engineer with Hua Chang-du, who's a registered engineer in British Columbia since 2008. He's got a degree from China, a master's degree from University of BC, and he got his registration in BC through experience and education, no examination. Is that right, Jason?
I believe so. And he's been practicing for 10 years. And
right.
He had all the references and everything. I mean, he's... Based on his references and his work product and everything he submitted, his resume, he seems more than qualified to be registered. You know, but that's why I wanted to bring it before the board to decide on these things. You know, yes, he hasn't taken an NCAA test. Is it really necessary in this case?
I think he fulfills the intent of the statute that says he's been practicing for 10 or more years in a regulated jurisdiction.
That was kind of my thought, too.
I'm not saying I agree with that part of the statute, but it's there, and I don't think we have an option.
I guess the only thing would be, does British Columbia have the, you know, same...
Similar...
See, the statute doesn't say that.
Yeah.
It just says 10 years. It does. It's 10 you years. Could have a license. I mean, I got a registration in Columbia that I got when I graduated from college, and I haven't practiced a day there. I've been practicing here. I guess if I had been practicing there for 10 years,
right,
without exam, without anything, I could just get registered based on the statute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, I didn't see any reason to make this guy take the test. It seemed kind of silly. Yeah, I think he's more than qualified to be registered. But
him personally might be. I personally think this is a bad policy because we have a hard time. How can we protect the public if we just issue licenses?
The problem is we have a statute that says we have to issue licenses based on 10 years of experience in a jurisdiction.
You can't jump around all
right,
over the place.
But this guy has 10 years in British Columbia. Yep. If he had 10 years in British Columbia, or 4 years in British Columbia, and 3 over in Alberta, and another one in Quebec, then and licenses and all those, but never getting 10, then we could have him take the test.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
I know this is semantics, but that third under 32.126.8.3, it says that has been actively engaged in another state or foreign country that it up for 10 years, holds a valid certificate of registration in good standing issued by that state, not province, or country, not province.
Country. Canada?
Well, he doesn't have a Canadian registration. He has a British Columbia registration.
Yeah, but I think state and province would be used interchangeably.
The intent, though.
Is it?
Those Canadians.
Yes. Was that the intent? Why do we say state, then?
I think you're really point of mind.
Yeah.
I'll make a motion to grant grant licensure to, I can't remember his name.
Chang. Mr. Chang.
Mr. Chang?
Hua Chang. Oh, Du. I'm sorry, Du.
Du. Hank Du.
I'll second.
Okay.
Don't vote for it if you don't agree.
Is there ever any consideration of language? And I suppose he's been in Canada for so long, he speaks well enough English, but see somebody from China to come and just read normal designs and prints, and it'd be difficult.
Yeah. Our statute doesn't differentiate that. No. We don't have any requirement of having a license somewhere for 10 years.
And he did go on and get a master's in British Columbia in engineering. So
you don't
discriminate
on
language.
You can't.
Well, that was my thought.
On anything. I mean, on anything. And all they get a certificate without education in a country that says they're an engineer.
It seems more than qualified.
Or an architect.
But
I'd like to change
it. Okay, we have motion, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Again, just observation. When we are certifying, this is almost exclusively on experience.
Yeah.
And that's what it's amounted to. That's what it's stands about. And for someone to give me two or three sentences to say, this is what I did in 10 years, period. I go, wait a minute. I would like, curricula vitae. I would like a 10-page some hefty weight of evidence provided by you, because I'm literally giving you a license based upon your three or four sentences of experience. Even though you have a registrant who's, and I know you, that's what your observation was, I have a registrant who's certified to it, that's all I need. So you're kind of abstaining yourself from making judgment by giving it to the registrant who accepts those three or four sentences.
Right. But in this case, this guy has 3 pages of projects he's worked on. I mean...
Yeah, he gave us a CV.
3 pages of all the projects.
No. I'm just supplementing the statute to say that the burden of justification should be on the applicant to justify with more than just a short, brief Section B or whatever it is. I'm sorry.
Had I reviewed this and he had one sentence that said, I've been doing civil projects, I would have said no. Staff needs to get a list of everything he's done. So, yeah, I mean, and I've done that before. I've asked them, no, this is unacceptable.
Okay.
You know, to have in that little one line just put, I've been doing drawings and calculations. No.
Not good.
No way.
Okay, I just wanted to make that point.
But in this case, he has and pages of projects he worked on.
Aren't you sorry you brought it back then?
What? That I brought this here?
You just approved it, Jason.
Yeah. I should have just approved it.
I think the discussion
And we've had this discussion with these, Canadian applicants before. That's why I just brought it up. Next time I'll just rubber stamp it.
Thank you. He said
we also noticed he's a membership confirmation in engineers and geoscientists. So he's...
Oh, is that what's going to slow you down?
He could be a trained geologist.
Yeah.
That'll be the next application.
Oh, by the way.
Okay, did we have a motion?
Yes.
And a second.
No votes.
And a second. Okay. So let's vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye. That's for you, buddy.
Thank you. I think that's what the statute says.
Yeah.
But I would like to direct staff to initiate as early as possible a change to the statute.
Okay.
It's not this individual. I think the issue is, what protection are we providing to the public if somebody can get registered based on experience only without any regard for anything else?
So not to Illinois.
Okay.
We need education.
This governor, good luck, you'll never get a training.
Well, you actually have something coming up later about registration by endorsement. I think that's a way to start, bring both of them together.
Yep.
Maybe it's a
Except
way to clean up
Except we couldn't
get
a form for Illinois, which is why it's where you guys look at.
That's a terrible statute.
It's a trouble.
Okay.
That hurt.
And I have no history, and none of us are old enough to know why that statute went in. Because I know the structurals are aggravated about it, too. There's, you show 4 years of acceptable experience doing some structural work, then you get the license without taking the structural BE.
Yeah, and I've talked about taking that one and taking that out forever.
Yeah, so I've heard complaints from the Structural Association on that, but that would be for any, you know, engineering discipline.
So the structural is trying to be civils.
Yeah, there you go.
That's it. I don't have a civil stamp, but I wouldn't do it, so.
But
I do think we should take the opportunity to revisit those exemptions from examination.
Okay.
And it really should be about protecting the public. I mean, it just paint, we got to make the case. You know, maybe, you know, Canada has good education and some safeguards, but there's other places that don't have any safeguards and we have no protection.
Okay. You're right.
Okay. 8A, consideration and recommendations for the following. One is for cancellation of registration certification that haven't expired for one full renewal period. So does anybody want to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that we cancel the registrations listed in 8A1 for failure to renew through one renewal period.
Second.
We have motion second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay, any opposed? Be sure it goes alphabetical so I know I'm not on it.
Yeah, I was going to send Neil out his notice.
Would you prefer that next time I make the list alphabetical?
That would be great. Hey, not that. Hopefully I'm not on that list. But you have it by certification number, right, Kurt?
That's what it looks like. It might be the expiration date.
Let's see here.
How come they're all consecutive numbers? Oh, wait, never mind. I'm looking at the wrong one.
They're by expiration date.
Okay.
Right now.
Carl Neal's safe this month.
Next month I'm coming up. Trying to decide when you're going to renew. And everybody else, the big five.
I'm not going to renew unless I can do it with credit card
dates. That's my stipulation. I got to be able to do it online.
This is a joke.
See me catch it.
Folded.
She's ignoring us now. No. She knows.
She knows.
Okay, let's move to 8A2. That's for information only. Newly granted certifications. Next on the agenda is 9A, proposed language for licensure by endorsement.
Yes. Okay. So this was predicated on a number of issues, and the reason here that it's here for your consideration, obviously, is because we couldn't get a quorum for L&R, and we thought if you are interested in doing something like this, which would be an ease of registration movement by this board, that we should have you look at it, comment, finalize it, and then over the summer start looking for a sponsor so we could get it considered in the next session. It's also something that I mentioned in the letter, which I do need you to approve in item 9C to the governor, as an attempt by this board to make it easier to get registered and to ease the process for veterans. So it's here in conjunction with 9C, and also because I think it's worthy of discussion. I put the language together. As you'll see, it looks pretty similar to our waiver of exam.
Like. Yeah, we just cut the time in half.
But in researching the language, I looked at various state statutes, and there are other boards in Arizona, including the board Patty chaired for a long time or directed for a long time, the chiropractic board, licensure by endorsement statutes. Mainly it's healthcare related because they have national exams, but you have national exams as well, so it's not something that should be exclusive to the health profession. If you're interested, chiro, naturopathic physicians, behavioral health examiners, the medical board for physicians, MDs, and occupational therapy, and physical therapy, optometry, and the nurses all have an equivalent statute. And they start off always with the payment of the fee, the actively engaged in your profession in another state where you're professionally licensed, and then I threw in our holding a qualification by a national council, because if you have a CLARB certificate or an NCARB blue cover or an MLE or an MLS from NCWS, we automatically accept them. Their standards is higher than our own state standard. And then, of course, I pulled the surveyors out because they're always pulled out in all our statutes. And I did add this deal about convicted of a felony because the other endorsement statutes include it. This is going to be controversial because of the legislation that passed this past session saying that criminal history should not stop somebody from getting licensed, but I think that applies more specifically to the occupations. However, here I put our language, which says that if the felony or any crime is reasonably related to the profession, that it gives us pause and we should be able to ask the applicant to provide enough evidence to demonstrate they will be safe to practice here. I think there's case law to support that, and I don't think, given that we license professions, that we'll get much pushback that I couldn't argue against. So it's here for your consideration as a general idea. Obviously, you can talk about language, whether you like it, you don't like it, whatever you want. This is your first look at it.
Doesn't A1 make it even less restrictive than what we just were talking about?
Well, and I think I've listened to that. Why do we have to include a foreign country in that?
Exactly. Just take it out.
I would rather tailor this. We have a lot of precedent across the country for the five-year stipulation, NCARB, the credential alternative review path for getting an NCARB certificate requires 5 years of licensed practice before you can submit for the CART, as we call it.
Okay.
And so there's precedent there, and I think that, and I'm very comfortable with that kind of thing for any other jurisdiction, you know, the other 54 architectural jurisdictions that are regulated, I have no problem.
Okay.
With that kind
of
high
endorsement. We can take out
more foreign country. But foreign country, I think we need to read.
Because we know we have U.S. territory.
Yeah.
And it should say U.S. state, too, so someone from an African state
doesn't come
and say, well, I'm in a state.
U.S. state.
In another U.S. state or territory.
U.S. state or territory.
Because then, it quite honestly, then it actually deals with, at least on the architectural side, it deals with the Canada and Mexico issues, and even, quite honestly, now Australia and New Zealand, because NCARB has MOUs with those countries that allow people in those that meet the NCARB criteria to get an NCARB certificate. So if they want to practice in Arizona and they live in New Zealand, get an NCARB certificate and then they're approved.
True.
So there's a pathway for some foreign registrants who meet the NCARB criteria to get licensed.
So that's when they would go under number two,
right,
A2, which is all
they go under two.
And good standing issued. So my question is, good standing issued by a national council recognized by the board.
Yes.
Can that be subject? I'm just asking. Can that be subject to misinterpretation, or the fact that it's recognized by the board? Just save us and limits us to NCES, NCARB, you know.
Have that language someplace else.
Yeah,
it's somewhere
do.
Already in statute or rule. There's already references to the national councils.
Okay.
But that's like, you know, say some unnamed architect decides to start their own council and we haven't recognized it. We don't want to.
Because it says recognized for the board, we're comfortable that, yeah.
Right. And it also saves us from putting in there NCWS because if they change their name, like, CLARB likes to do every 2 years. You know,
but countries could have
statute.
A lot of countries have engineering councils.
But it's not recognized by the
right.
U.S.
So that's
national.
Right, that's what I was wondering. Do we need to say U.S. national council or anything like that?
We could certainly do it.
Yeah. We could. Or just recognized by the board. I mean, if Canada has a council and you don't recognize it, then you don't recognize it.
And you guys are okay with the 5 year.
I don't have a problem with the five. Somebody who's got a license in another state and has been practicing 5 years, it's fine.
Yeah.
Just.
But it's not 1 year.
No.
Even though they'd be professionally registered
technically,
for 1 year.
Technically, 5 years is a
they
good
qualify, but I think 5 years is a good cut-off.
There's time to determine specific practicing.
Yeah.
You know, we're only asking for verification of license if it's standing from the one state. If somebody's jumping around, getting revoked, and they're just kind of staying ahead of that cycle, should we get verification of good standing in any states for a license?
Yeah, I think so.
That's what we do with the resident applicants, so it would be consistent.
Yeah.
So is that 5 years?
I think
5 years from the start, or 5 years after they've been registered?
After they've been registered. I've been actively engaged as a professional registrant 5 years.
As a professional registrant, okay.
And I think spreading it out so that if it's multiple states, because quite honestly, depending upon the economy, people move around.
Yeah,
I don't think it's fair to penalize them if they have 10 years of experience, but they've lived in five different states.
Yeah.
They're registered in five different states, and they've lived in each one for 2 years. They're still qualified.
They've only gotten registered and, you know, they practice primarily in one state, got registered in like another state where they only did one or two projects and then had that registration canceled. Do we really want to see that? You know?
I think it's active registration.
Yeah.
I think active.
I mean, it can be just actively engaged in other states or territories. It doesn't have to be one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that. In other U.S. states or territories.
Excellent. Except professional registrants.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I think what this does is it forces us to have to look at the licensure by the waiver of examination part of our statute, because this ties into it. And mm-hmm. I think then it opens the door for us to look at that 10-year foreign portion of it.
And that is really the biggest issue with the 32-126 is the foreign country is what I worry about.
NCARB did away with the whole BEA program,
mm-hmm.
and they just said, you're a foreign registrant, and you're not under one of the accord, you have to take the exam.
Yeah.
And that is plain and simple, and we could write stuff like that that just says, you got to take the exam, and you got to show experience.
So I would suggest that we bring this as a complete rewrite of 32-126, including the exemptions.
Okay.
I don't think you're going to get a whole lot of pushback if all we strike out of the other one is foreign country. If we get too cute trying to massage it too much, it might be problematic. But if you just take out foreign country, I think we'll be okay.
Okay. Well, I think the legislature would be fine in having applicants from foreign countries be consistent with applicants from the U.S.
Right.
It's almost like if you're from a foreign country, you get more
a benefit. Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, this one issue, I'd be happy to speak to anybody you want to about, because again, we're not protecting the public.
Right.
Somebody might get a registration by not even going to school somewhere else.
You're right.
So you need a defined registration, like a certification here? I mean, what is that? What would that mean? Because people are certified in geology in some state, but they haven't taken the exam or ASVOG exam. Are they qualified? Do they meet that qualification?
Yes, they would be, because we consider their practice professional in Arizona, whereas we don't consider, it would apply also to home inspectors who are certified in another state, even though their practice is occupational. So I think...
But certification...
People are better than standards in Arizona, so if somebody, another state has considerably lower standards, that would kind of not qualify.
Yeah, but then we have to keep track of what the standards are in all the country,
and that's,
in all
and,
the states.
And that's kind of been
that's what we've been doing
now,
yeah.
And that's
and
a royal
ridiculous.
Pain in the neck,
yeah.
Because it's like, how do I know what the standards were when they got registered in 1980?
So. I mean, I think realistically, all the registrations within the U.S. are pretty comparable, so I don't have a problem with just granting comedy or whatever you want to call it, or endorsement. But once it gets outside, it's hard to keep track of the standards.
You're talking registration. That's different than certification.
Well, yeah, but not for geologists. I would argue that geologists who practice professionally in other states have a registration versus a certification, which implies legally a lesser stringent...
Well, but there are states that don't have the examination requirement.
Oh.
So it's a lesser requirement.
But when you review the geology applicants, as long as they've been registered in good standing according to this for 5 years,
It wouldn't matter if they took the test.
But they have to be comparable to our Arizona registration. They just have to be registered in good standing in their state.
Yeah. I mean, you would recommend it anyway at this point.
I do.
If somebody, even if they don't have the education, or in many states where they've been registered that didn't require the ASVAB test, we still give registration to them.
So what happens to our geologists in training? I think you need to address it.
They're in the pool.
They're in the pool.
Yeah. You don't get registered just because you were an EIT or an LSIT or a GIT. You have to be professionally practicing.
How about alarms? Should we not have alarms be part of it since they don't have any consistency?
Yeah, we could say not including alarms. Or excluding alarms.
I mean, it already talks about except land surveyors. You can say excluding land surveyors and alarm agents.
On C, why do we have that is reasonably related to the profession?
Because that's the language here. And that's where all the case law is going. Because that was my problem. I really wanted to take that out of the language and just say, you're a felon, you should be... But it has been longstanding in the statutes in these professions that it has to be, the crime has to be reasonably related.
I know, but the way this reads is the board may grant licensure by endorsement for an applicant for professional registration who has been convicted of a felony or a crime, and then it should just be comma,
that
if the applicant can successfully demonstrate rehabilitation, good moral character. I mean,
we can, but
whether related to their profession or not.
Right.
You know, I mean, if a guy's convicted of murder and does his time, it's not reasonably related.
But, no, but if he's
but if he's demonstrated his rehabilitation, good moral character, and everything else, maybe you do. It's a case by case. It says may, but I don't know why the reasonably related.
What it means, Jason, is if it's not related, you don't even go to C. You just go. You stick with the other stuff, and you can get registered.
Yeah.
If it's not related, you don't need to go to C. What this is saying is giving people who have an offense related to the profession that they also have a path forward if they can prove that they, you know, have good moral character.
But if it's not related, you still have a path forward, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
you don't even have to go through C.
I didn't want to say shall, because I think
I understand. I just don't understand why that sentence of that is reasonably related to the profession for which the registration sought is even necessary.
You want to just take it out?
I think it should be felony or crime, comma, if the applicant, and move on, because...
I think this makes the legislature feel better, to be honest, that we're not overreaching and not being so broad, Jason.
I think the point was this is historic. This is what the state has always felt, is that there has to be an attachment to your professional conduct. Is that correct? Is that what I heard 5 minutes ago?
It's always been a new statute.
Well, I know, the way I read this is if it's not reasonably related, then you may grant it, but then maybe you have to grant it because it's not reasonably related.
It's resurfacing in all the Institute for Justice language.
I think it gives us a tool to make our decision more defensible because if we have an applicant come in who happens to be a convicted and registered sex offender, and then we get that court transcript and we happen to find out that it had to deal with children, we could say, you at a very least we could restrict practice and they can't do school work, they can't do hospital work, I mean anything that would enter daycare, anything. So I think it just gives us something in our toolbox to allow us to say, we denied your registration because your offense is reasonably related to your practice of architecture.
Yes, and arguably, being an argumentative person by nature and training, I think the serious crimes like murder and sex offenses and all that are always reasonably related to the profession because you have to make good choices as a professional registrant. Clearly, you're not capable of doing that if you've been convicted of murder and sex offenses and all those serious crimes. I mean, that demonstrates lack of good judgment when you have a felony that serious.
So that gets back to the question then. They say it was murder, you did your time, whatever it was, you got off. You're theoretically rehabilitated. you're 1 year out of prison, 2 years out of prison, 10 years out of prison. Where does it come up?
Yeah.
Where you?
Even the state bar won't license for. Imagine that. No. But they, even though perfectly qualified, pass the bar exam, not ethically capable of practicing law.
I had the opportunity to look at Oregon's application here recently, and where we say, have you ever been convicted of a traffic offense or a DUI or whatever it says on ours, they don't even say that. They say specifically on their application, have you ever been convicted of anything that is specifically related to your profession? So they're really up there. They've narrowed it down to, we don't want to know anything about your moral character or your...
Because they got you some
conduct.
But once again,
I guess so,
who's making the determination if it's related to their profession?
They are.
They're asking the applicant.
Yeah, and I think that's the point. It's the, what do they say?
I don't know. I just don't see the reason for that sentence in there. It just doesn't seem to be
an
exact.
I'm hearing
it. It should just be for any felony or crime.
We'll see. And if you're, once you're happy with this language, and if we find a sponsor, they may want to change things too. But I think we should put in everything now and see if people want to pull stuff out.
Yeah.
I think it's a valid argument. I've been on your side for years, but it seems like with the Institute for Justice and all of those anti-regulation people, they're pushing this because, you know, they think that somehow it's going to let rehabilitated criminals back in. And maybe it will for the occupations, you know. Go forth and be a registered contractor if you've been convicted of murder. But do we want, as, you know, the regulators of professions, a registered sex offender or someone who's been a rehabilitated murderer representing themselves to the public as a professional engineer or an architect? I mean, that's a may decision, not a shall. And we have shall in A. I think we can have may in C, and hopefully the legislature will like it. So
I'd like at least to have the opportunity to hear from the applicant, like we do here, and we've heard several cases in the past year that I think one of them was pretty egregious, where a guy runs into a cop car or something that's parked on the side of the road. The other one was a kid streaking at a baseball game. The other one was a kid that had a girlfriend that was 17 and he was 18 or something. So
yeah,
you know, weeding that stuff out
reasonable.
Is having that opportunity, I think, is important.
Yeah, but I mean, driving drunk in your company car and smashing into police officers, reasonably related to the profession. You know, you're driving around representing yourself as a certified home inspector and you're drunk and you smash into police cars.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going back to C again on this.
Okay.
Is there even any reason to even have this whole paragraph in this? Because isn't this already covered in another statute? Because we're not going to be licensed by endorsement then. Because if you're licensed by endorsement, it would say shall. If it's a may, then we already have that.
The way
that's already part of the regular process.
But what if you get an application from somebody who's already registered, who has subsequently been convicted of something in the state board, like North Dakota, hasn't really taken any action, you know, and probably never will. Do we want to give that person a license by endorsement?
Yeah,
I think C is necessary. I mean, I
think it is too.
So let me throw this question out, since we talked about foreign applicants. What about foreign crimes? I mean, how do we handle somebody from England or Canada that has a felony in their country? How do we deal with that?
LexisNexis probably doesn't pull that up.
Yeah, as I say, we wouldn't even know if they don't report it.
That's a good point. I don't know.
Well, but if we pull foreign applicants out of this part of the mix, then it doesn't, it's not
and
as a concern here, but somewhere it's going to apply.
Yeah.
Right, it still applies to some other statute.
Still applies somewhere else, right.
Yeah, I think we've done that with that suggestion to pull out or foreign country. Because what this says is only people registered in the U.S. or U.S. territories qualify for licensure by endorsement.
Right.
That doesn't mean we won't license foreign applicants from other countries, but they don't get endorsement.
And that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think we need to look at getting rid of the waiver of examination for foreign applicants.
That's what I was going to say. Can we direct you, Melissa, to, as part of the response to the government, bring this up, as we discussed it today, but also the rest of 32.126, and I think remove references to foreign countries.
Okay.
just, and I think, you know, when we explain the rationale, I mean, one is that it doesn't make sense, but two, that we need to make both of these, the licensure by endorsement and the rest of the statute, consistent.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't want them to read differently.
No, I agree.
And that if you need, I mean, I'm assuming maybe AIA or ACEC would help us sponsor something like this.
Tina had actually asked for a copy of this, so once we fix it up, I'll probably
And I'm happy to talk
out.
To ACEC if you want to, because I think, yeah. They probably have a better chance of pushing it forward than we would.
And I think this, too, even though we say we're going to accept national council records, we're also saying you don't need them if you're already professionally licensed. You know, so save your $400 in CARB transmittal fee and just send us proof that you're registered in good standing in another state and you qualify for endorsement.
I don't think that hurts the public in any way. So.
I don't think so either.
They charge $400 in transfer information.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so do you need a motion for this, or is this enough direction?
I think a motion that you want to pursue endorsement is a good thing to have on the record.
Mr. Chair, I move that we move forward with the proposed legislation for licensure by endorsement with the corrections that we discussed this morning.
Including the consistency with the rest of the statute?
Consistency with the rest of the statute.
Okay.
And we need to move that forward to L&R?
I don't think so. No, okay. You guys rank above L&R, so.
Good.
I'll second that.
Okay.
Second that. All right.
Sure, why not?
We have a motion to second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Cool.
Okay.
This will be fun.
Come on, yeah. 13 minutes.
All right, let's go. 9B.
Oh, just FYI, you know, every year now we're doing that Google survey about employee engagement and how happy they are working for us and working for the state. This year, we had more people answer percentage-wise than we did last year, so our response rate went down from 54.7 to 10.2. Or 11.2, which is still 2 points over I work at an excellent agency standard, which is 9. The state as a whole went down to 2.4. So this is just FYI. Staff, for the most part, likes working here, and I'm proud to say that. So I just thought I'd share it with you. This is the information they provide. You can see the questions staff had to answer, and
so these numbers, you, this group here, the tech board?
Yes. So we are the blue part, and the state is the red part, and then the info I sent you is specific to us, and then also there's a separate sheet that looks just the same for the state. So I thought you'd find it interesting to see at least the questions that we ask staff every year. And we don't have any input in the questions. Right. That's something the state and Google have decided. But anyway, I thought you should see it. So if you have questions, I don't know if you do.
So how does that read then? Say 2018, they're all light pale or whatever that color is. How do you know your group versus the state average?
The state said that if you're on page 1857, Steve, all the way to the right, it says state 2018.
So the state's in tan, and then where under 2015 to 2018.
Okay. That's you guys.
You have the last 4 years of the board. Melissa, I think overall it's still very good.
It is.
But I think there's a couple of things to look into, you know, like if I use my ideas on work-related problems, that dropped from 100% to 79%. Uh-huh. And supports more participation, educational and professional development also dropped from the 90s to the 70s. So, I mean, those are not hard things to improve, but just things to think about. And I think you're working on that. I mean, a lot of people are going through the NCES and some of the other things. But just because it's good doesn't mean we can't do better. So.
Exactly. And all of the managers, Patty and I have talked about this. and it's something we review pretty regularly. If not monthly, at least every couple months. Like, are there seminars we want to send people to? Is there, you know, someone we should look at for professional development, enhancement, bonuses, raises, all of that? We consider it pretty regularly. And obviously with these questions, it depends on who answers them too. I mean, you guys know better at statistics than I am, so. But I appreciate your thorough review.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I think I speak for the whole board. You guys do a great job, so thank you. We don't say that often enough.
We try. Thank you for that.
All right.
So, what did you think of the letter we have to send to the governor? We received the executive order issued by the governor back in January, and he's very serious about hearing how we're making reciprocity easier for people and how we're helping veterans. So that was kind of my approach in this, was first of all to tell them again what we do and why we do it, which I think is continually important to remind them, and that we don't require people who want to be geologists or engineers or architects to get registered, but if they want a stamp and seal, they should. So we're not stopping anyone from working in a chosen profession. We're just saying if you want to be the responsible charge, that you have to get registered. I think that's important to tell them. And I also think that we have made getting registration in Arizona much easier in just the past few years within ourselves, and we already have easier standards to get registered than our fellow states do because we don't mandate education. We encourage it, but we don't mandate it. So do you want to add, change, take out anything in the letter? What are your thoughts?
One thing I see at the end is it says, hopefully this letter satisfies the requirements of executive order.
Yeah.
To me, that just sounds...
Yeah.
Wimpy? Okay.
No, not wimpy. Kind of snotty, really.
Condescending.
Yeah, just say, we appreciate the opportunity to share our...
Something like that. I like the second half.
On a more positive
note. Yeah, we appreciate the opportunity to share how we're working to help veterans.
And our door
and
is always open to your questions or something like
come
that.
Come see
yeah.
us, Ducey.
My other point, Melissa, is at the bottom of page one.
Yeah.
I think you highlight as one of the pros exactly the thing we just talked about. You know, for instance, a foreign trained professional will qualify for an exam exemption if he can provide da 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 da. I would change that paragraph to focus on someone trained in another state as opposed to a foreign country, and not reference the statute. You can reference the statute, but not quote it where it says or foreign country. Just say that, you know, 32.126 allowing someone who's trained and registered in another state to get registered without taking the exam.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Other than that, I'm happy to sign it if you send it to me.
Okay.
And just put a smiley face at the end for Jason too.
ASAP. All right. So do you want me to take out the quote about the foreign country?
I think so. I don't think you need to bring it up.
Flash.
I mean,
I would just say, been practicing engineering in another state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As a professional registrant.
In another state as a professional registrant. Okay. I kind of did.
And then get rid of country.
National councils. Are you okay with the?
That's fine. The only thing is the foreign country, since we're going to change it, I don't want to highlight it as a benefit and then take it out.
Yeah, that's cool. I didn't realize you were going to go that way today, so that's why it's here. Ed, your thoughts?
I agree with everything that's been said. The footnotes comes across a little snarky.
Well,
to be blunt, but because quite
say
honestly,
Jason
I don't.
Madison
well,
says.
There we go. There we go. Because
considering you're not even going to read this.
When you say large amounts of money,
it really isn't.
I paid $1,000 to establish my council record a gazillion years ago. I paid $225 a year to maintain it. I don't consider that large in the context of my career and the fact that I've been able, and it does cost $400 to transmit an application, but to look at it in the context that I can practice in 8 different states, it only cost me $400 to do that.
Times 110,000 registered architects in the country.
But not everybody.
But that's not expensive to him.
Nobody's holding a gun to their head.
Okay.
I think you can keep.
See it being. I think calling it expensive.
It's just about getting rid of the adjectives. You don't need the adjectives that say large amounts of money. Or then say that applicants obtained expensive records. Just say obtained council records. Yeah, okay.
This is something I drill into our interns, to use the wrong term, all the time. It's like, oh, the exam's so expensive. I go, you are in a professional career, and it's going to cost you $800 to get licensed in that professional career. Come on, that's something that's spread that out over a lifetime. You know?
Do they refer to you as being a gazillion years old?
They do. But then I remind them, I go, well, how much was your tuition when you were in college? And they go, $5,000 a semester. I actually have my fees receipt for my first semester at the University of Arizona. I pull it out and I go, look at this, $225.
That's how old I am.
You're chiseling stuff.
Yeah, we were.
Okay. Learning to light fire.
I have taken out for large amounts of money and expenses. Okay. Did you want to add anything else? I think
it's good.
Is cool.
To the point, yeah. Fine. Okay. You're bringing specific examples.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll finish that up today and email it to you, and then we'll send it on to...
It's due first of next week, right? July 1st?
July 1st.
Oh, so it's due this week. Because that's Sunday.
Yeah.
Do you copy other people?
And we're flying off to parts unknown in Detroit, so I'll get it to you as soon as possible.
Let's get it done before you leave, because we don't know
what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't. Do you think we should copy other people?
Does he have a second in command who... I mean, he might never get this, really, right?
I mean, I'm going to email it to Emily Rajakovich, who is his policy advisor for the 9-10 boards. He'll never read it.
I think he's the one that requested it. I think we should address it to the governor.
Yeah, it's a response to an executive order. They asked us to send this. It's not. Yeah. We're not sending them a letter. They asked us to respond to an executive order.
Good?
Good.
Okay, so we're good with this, as changed.
Mm-hmm. You should put some whereases in, though. Series of whereases.
I was thinking of changing the colors, you know, and highlight. No.
Okay. Item 10, Melissa, your report.
Okay. My report. they're putting it off. All right. Computer system. The CRM is costing us more. Surprise, surprise.
$8,900 a year, you mean, or more than that?
The license from Microsoft so far is $8,900 for everyone to use the CRM. However, we've heard from IT partners who helped us, the vendor that helped us migrate, that we are apparently using our sandbox incorrectly. So we have licenses and we have a sandbox. And what we've done is they've pulled all the info from GeoSolutions and from our old CRM. It all kind of got thrown together in this sandbox. Apparently, we're not supposed to use it that way. So we have a request to Microsoft for a new sandbox where he's going to fix the data and put it in appropriately. That's my lay take on it. Gentlemen, is there a better explanation for that?
Basically, the old CRM system is our production site. The one that he had to create from the old GL stuff is the sandbox or the development site. What he needs to do is he needs another development site to take the production of the development information and bring them together into one thing, and then we'll probably have to get another production site to move that into there. That way the functionality is going to be better and faster.
Did they not do this to start with just because of time constraints?
Right. And licensing through Microsoft. So to do that data cleanup, the quote is $100,000. Yes. However, we have the money in this fiscal year to pay for that, and I've written the comptroller, and the state has given us until July 30th to use the money from this fiscal year to do that. Now, you'll probably remember from last month, I said their plan was a two-part. First, to fix the data, and then to create a portal which will allow for online use, online renewals, online applications, online complaint submittals, all that. I'm afraid what that will cost, but it looks like, having seen the JLBC and the OSPB projections for our budget, that we will probably have about $200,000 extra in the coming fiscal year, fiscal 19, that we can apply to it without asking for a special appropriation.
Do we have a quote to know what that might cost?
Don't have a quote yet, and it was like pulling teeth to get the quote for $100,000 from these people. I mean, initially it was, we'll get to it, oh, $11,000. I'm like, this is awesome, sign me right up. Well, no, that wasn't what that quote was for. I'm learning this computer lingo is not really in English. They think it, they pretend it's in English, but it isn't. And then we got a quote for $85,000, then that went up because the programmer we're using is more expensive. So we have a solid quote at $100,000. We have the approval to use our leftover money to pay for that. So our data, hopefully, will be in good shape by the end of July, regardless of where we may end up going. We will probably have the option of going with the state choice, which is Salesforce, although we are hearing equally concerning accounts from other state agencies about their migration onto Salesforce, almost as bad as what we experienced with GL. So no one's been pushing us to go with Salesforce like they were a few months back, which I think is pretty interesting. And we will have this option with IT partners to enhance our CRM, although that is not the preferred state option for us. And I got kind of a hissy fit letter from OSPD about that. Well, it won't look good for you, Melissa, if you go with the CRM. And I'm thinking, will anyone know what we do or care about what we do in 6 months? And what if it's the best for us? Anyway, that aside, I was well behaved, and we're not worried about that just yet. So over the summer, we have to plan an IT strategic plan and do our budget. Obviously, we're going to be working on the documents that say we want to go to online accessibility, and that means creating a portal with whatever software licensed people we can. And then in our budget submission, both which are due September 1st, we're going to ask for however much it will cost. So we'll have $200,000 that we can play with, so to speak, like maybe do a couple things with the CRM folks, and then hope we'll get the bulk of the money for following.
Salesforce. Mm-hmm.
But, so that's the basic plan for now. I wish I had more information for you. I mean, it's been like pulling teeth over at Asset, over even with the vendor who I was happy stepped up and helped us migrate back. And there you have it. It's a continual challenge. I seriously don't understand why no one can build a state computer software system that works. Clearly, I seriously don't. I don't get it. And, you know, Asset is supposed to be the experts in the IT field for all of the state, and why they didn't understand that data at small agencies is in bad shape. We need to test. We need to understand how much time and effort our staff need to put into things. None of that was considered. So everyone, as far as I've heard, have all these inconsistent and unplanned for circumstances that,
It sounds to me, everything that I've seen, that we hire people to do this, to build us some tools so we can do something.
Mm-hmm.
Is there the opportunity just to contract the whole thing out and say, we don't touch any of it, we're paying you to run this thing? Like PayPal or something like that.
But they would have to be on state contract through procurement because that's the only way state money can be spent over $25,000. And to do that means that sometimes those managers have no idea what we do. And so they could build something that we can't operate because...
I mean, who runs Service Arizona?
I have no idea.
You know, I mean, do we need to look at something like that? Maybe we pay them $200,000 a year and they take care of it all and we don't do anything.
Well, that's what Asset was trying to do, especially with this whole Salesforce project, was to be the project manager for these 13 smaller agencies, build sort of a catch-all computer software system that everyone could use, but they didn't understand what the 13 boards and commissions were doing. And so when data migration occurred, they had no idea where some of the data should have gone and nothing worked and change orders. And then they realized they didn't have the skill to transfer the data, which they didn't contract for. So then those negotiations, I mean, it was a nightmare. And so I'm afraid to leave everything in someone else's hands, since they clearly don't understand how we operate.
But every year, 2 years, whatever, I mean, I buy license plates, I do my driver's license. Mm-hmm. On the outside, it's the same thing, right? It's confidential information, and it's paying, and it's...
Mm-hmm.
So, what's so different about us than ADOT?
I don't know.
Nothing. It's a...
You know, and could we do it through Service Arizona?
I can ask.
I mean, wouldn't that be just a dandy appropriate place, being that it's Arizona?
Well, I think what you're suggesting that we do, I mean, I don't think it'd be Service Arizona, but I think what you're saying, Jason, is actually what they're trying to do with Salesforce. It's just put most of the state agencies in one
right.
system that can handle the database management, the online processing of all those things. That's what Salesforce is. And I, you know, my opinion is where we're at this point is we have to keep the system running. So if you need to spend $100,000 to keep the system running, we got to spend it. And then after that,
yeah.
I think if the state's going to do Salesforce, we're such a small agency that we need to hitch our wagon to something bigger.
Yeah.
Just trying to mm-hmm. fix everything on our own is not going to work. We don't have the technical
right.
resources to be reviewing the work, to specify what needs to be done, all that other stuff. So, you know.
Yep. So anyway, the saga continues. I just wish I had better news. And it's frustrating to me because I hate to lose. I mean, I seriously do. And this was a loss for me because I had no control over the computer companies. You know, I don't have any control other than to call every day and email and, you know, make noise. And
well, I think that reinforces my point. I have the benefit of watching you struggle through this, so it's easy for me to say a bunch of stuff. But you're not the only one that's gone through this.
Right.
Not everybody, but many people have.
Right.
And I hate it as much as you do. I think that these people are crooks, and I'll say that here in this public meeting. But if we deal with, or if there's a way to get with Service Arizona, we're not dealing with the outside anymore. We're dealing
yeah.
with the
well,
inside.
I can always find out what vendor ADOT used for their software programs. I mean, hopefully they're still on state contract.
I think bigger than, and you probably said this a minute ago, we're not looking to do this. We're looking to contract
right.
everything out.
Right.
So that nobody in this office has to touch any of it.
And that
we
would
just
be
write
sweet.
Them a check.
I mean, you know, Morgan Reed, the head of Asset, said that we need to do what we're good at, which is license and regulate, not worry about computer stuff, which that sounds great, but in reality it's been a huge challenge. Are you aware the state has moved off of Office 365 and Microsoft to Google? So all our documents are moving to Google, all our email is Google, and that has been seriously frustrating for staff because we've learned that the basic Google service is supposed to be free, but then you have to add on apps to do things like print envelopes. Yeah, Kurt was researching that yesterday, so I don't know that even that was researched appropriately, because it was supposed to be this great savings, and woohoo, we're going to Google, it'll be great. And it's really, really difficult. So Kurt could tell you more about Google if you're interested, but you know, we're going to have to add on, and so God only knows how much that's going to cost us, too. In addition to our Microsoft CRM license to operate our own database. So computer fun never ends. But the rules passed, and I passed out the timeline that Kurt had been keeping. The only date that really is missing is the June 5th date of when Burke actually approved the rules on the consent agenda, and JMAD would have been thrilled. It was a 6-minute meeting.
There you go.
Yep.
Nice.
No
Why
questions,
can't we do that?
No comments, and they become effective the first week of August. So the rules and the statutes that all change are all effective that first week of August. So we're trying to be proactive in putting that information out on the website, on the Facebook, the newsletter, any way we can, just to let people know there will be some changes. The biggest statute change for us directly here is the home inspector fingerprint cards. We're going to be out of that business, and they're going to get clearance cards, which is great.
Quick question on that, Melissa. Mm-hmm. Just in a quick sentence, could you summarize the Public Works rule change, or is that something I can do offline or should do offline?
Well, actually, Patty prepared for that.
Did?
You did. Public Works rules change. I don't know that the Public
I
Works...
it changed.
Well, there's just a Section 9 added to that title.
You still have
so
to be registered.
I sent it to you yesterday, Jason. Did you get that?
Oh, I probably left or something.
Yeah, public works projects must be sealed by all involved professionals.
What does that mean?
So,
why don't you read them the sentence?
So if it's a set of highway plans, we need a civil engineer and a surveyor.
Yes.
Okay.
And seals no longer require the expiration date of the professional registration.
That's a good thing.
That's a good thing.
Okay. But people don't have to get new seals, right? They can continue
Correct.
To have it's the same.
If you read the line 9, yeah. It's pretty simple. Just clarify what you're already doing.
It's probably simple to me, but not the people I work with.
And gentlemen, this is William Bill Will, who is our new investigator.
There. Welcome.
Okay. And why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself?
Well, I was born.
Not that one.
Oh, okay, not that far back. I retired from the Goodyear Police Department last year, and was looking for somewhere to go. And I happened to know a gentleman by the name of Ron Dowler. And that led me here. Like everyone else, at the board of what?
Did you pull him over one time or something?
No. Actually, he was one of the instructors in the academy class I was in. And then I turned around and I was instructing the academy when he left. So, no, never pulled him over. If I did, it'd be a, oh yeah, okay, bye, see ya, I'm out of here. I'm running the other way.
Don't do it again.
Yeah, don't do it again. And so, wound up here and came in, there was an opening popped up, and hey, look, I know what that is now. And applied for it, and met the director and Patty, and here I am.
Yeah, and cool. Carlin recommended him, even though he's not a sports
player. Yeah, I know. See, you grabbed the part. I'm wearing grabbed a Coyotes necktie.
Oh, good. Good play. Good move.
Yeah.
I sat there, I looked up at his clock, and oh, okay, I know what to do now. But it's all knowing how to show for the audience. You know?
That's right. Yeah. Very cool. Welcome, Will.
Great. Welcome aboard.
It's a lot so far trying to understand it, but you know, it seems like you're basic, like everything else, you know, everything follows a committee or a board meeting, and the rules are set forward, and there you are.
So, thank you, appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill.
We are continuing our outreach to our community. Shelley and Doug Carlin are going to go to an ALARM annual conference in Scottsdale in August. Rob's going to go to the CLEAR meeting in Philadelphia, which is a national group of regulators and international as well. They have folks from Canada that participate and regulate all kinds of different professions. And I'll go to FARB in Oregon in September. Patty's going to go to CLARB. And we have people interested in the ASBOG meeting.
I wonder why.
So just let me know if there are any meetings you want to go to.
Where's ASBOG at?
It's in Monterey.
Monterey.
Ooh.
Yeah. Right. Place in the Midwest.
Not going to Detroit like the architect.
Yeah. Yeah. We have Jack and Patty are going to go to CLARB, and then NCWS, you guys know, is here. I'm hoping some of the investigators will go. The only problem is that law enforcement program runs Friday and Saturday, so I'm getting some pushback from staff who don't want to be there on the weekend, and I understand that. So as it stands, Patty, Kurt, Scott, me, who else is going? Rob, yeah, and Orlean. So with the board members, I think we should have a pretty good contingent there. And you guys know I'm talking about the legislation in Arizona in one of the, okay. I'll disclaim that these are my opinions only and not you. So.
I saw her speak last year. She's really civil. She's not the
evil she's not her normal self.
Yeah.
I try. My alter ego behaves in other situations. We did, as you know from the email I attached, talk to the lady who's in charge of appointments. We'll see. She did email me again last week. Thank you, me, for my email that I reviewed all the documentation.
And out of self-preservation, I'll check with Tucson.
Melissa,
we don't have to do any registration. You do all the registration.
But he hadn't.
Well, it doesn't look like it, but he's
myself.
No. If you want a second term, you will need to apply.
No. I mean for the meeting.
Oh, for the meeting.
I'm sorry.
If you're funded, they want you to register yourself.
I should register myself.
Yes.
Okay. But I'm not.
But you won't be funded, so we will register you if we haven't already.
Okay.
I did name you guys, the three of you, as our delegates.
Right.
So we can all sit together. And I love getting second notices, you know, and I'm like, here, I sent this to you last week. Yeah, I mailed this to you last month, and, you know, it just makes me happy.
I'm registered.
You're registered, Jason?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you guys and Rob are going to stay at the hotel. Gene and the rest of us will just be
commuting,
arriving there for, and you're okay with that.
But we'll get a badge.
Oh, yeah, you're official, and you're just not going to stay at the hotel.
No, okay. I'm fine.
But you can eat their food and go to their party.
And go to the party.
Yes, okay. You're official. And we still have time for ASBOG, so I know Jason, Jafu wants to go, as well as Steve. So if you want to go, we should make a big showing at ASBOG. They'll appreciate it.
Bring your surfboard.
How exciting is
your surfboard?
Yes. And the numbers that are on here are... Kurt has pulled them from the CRM. We're still not 100% sure all the numbers are accurate, but they looked okay. So I haven't seen a huge decline. What you'll notice in the total number of actives is it's down by about 350 from last month, which is weird, but it could just be the computer data.
Just counting correctly?
Yeah. Or pulling from the right categories or whatever. But Kurt ran them a couple times, and they fluctuate every month, so I'm not too concerned. It just seemed a little weird to me, and I thought if you were scrutinizing, I should have an explanation.
Thanks for the disclaimer.
Yeah. So any questions, guys? That's my report.
I have a request. Not
you do?
A question, yes. WTS, you know what that is? Women in Transportation Seminar wants the board to present, well, they want you and me to present in Tucson September 13th.
Okay.
Are you available for Patty?
2%? We have something in September for half moon seminars. Just let me look at the...
As long as it's not September 11th. Yeah, that's fine. That's a Thursday.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll open I-10 for you and do whatever you need.
Thank you. Oh, my God.
Fly her down in a helicopter.
All right. I'll say that we're available then.
Okay. Do you know what they want us to talk about?
Yes, they want to talk about new rules, any updates on the board, and they also heard that the board was going to, or was going through a deregulation process, or there's rumors of deregulation, so they want to hear about it.
Do they want PowerPoints and all that?
Seems to be given numerous times.
We're good. Good. Is it a big group?
It'll probably be 40 people, 50, somewhere around there.
All women?
No, there's a couple of guys that show up. Why not?
They have to be invited, though.
Yes.
Okay.
You can't be a member. You can go to lunch, but you can't be a member.
That's cool.
What if I set up men in transportation?
Questions?
Nope. Right.
So we get you until, we have you guys until you're replaced.
Do you have any idea when that might
that
be?
I
do not. But you saw my most recent response to her. She emailed me back thanking me and saying that she would let me know if she had any questions. So who knows. But you do need to reapply. 3 years has zipped by with you.
No, you're going to meet him.
You have already reapplied, but Jay Foo's term is actually up the end
August.
Of this month, too.
And
it was
Neil,
just, it's
Neil
actually
reapplied.
Up this month, but there was a delay in your appointment, so
he would be good
yeah.
Okay, well, I'll reapply here tomorrow.
Do it. So, you guys are okay with serving until they find adequate replacement.
Do you get paid? So technically,
oh, yeah.
His term's up in 4 days,
these
5 days.
These three guys.
Well,
join the ranks of J-Man.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
as of Friday.
Yeah.
We're done.
July 1st, it's you guys are off the board. Next Christmas pictures, and there are not going to be very many people there because I'm not on the board, you're not on the board, you're not on the board, you're not on the board.
That's retirement, Jason.
Okay.
It's going to be Jack. Jack and Gene all by themselves.
Yep, so I think that's it for my
I think mine will be easier to
report
than yours. All right, Melissa.
Oh, and you know our verifications. We get to charge for verifications now.
Yes.
Which means when licensees want to get registered in other states, our licensees, they now have to pay us $25 for us to transmit their license proof.
Yeah.
And the national councils aren't exempt from that either. So I sent out a nice letter. Patty looked at it before I sent it.
Patty.
Just informing them that they were not exempt and that their requests for our free verifications would not take precedent over the public's requests for verifications, and they owe us $25 for each verification they request.
Well, actually, they just passed it on to
the
Yeah, they charge an extra $25.
Actually, NCWS was the only one of the councils that responded and said, thank you for that information. We'll make a note of that and put it up on our website.
Very cool.
Yes. So, cool. Thank you.
Thank you. So let's go to 12 standing committee reports. L&R. Home inspector rules for standards?
Nada.
Nada, okay. Board member reports, ASBOG.
Working on it.
Talk about Monterey, right?
Yeah.
Okay. CLARB. Nice. Toronto.
Yeah.
September, good time. MCARB. All the glamour of the Motor City.
Yep. Leave tomorrow morning.
Neil
what
said
time
his
do you
luggage
get in?
Was 845 pounds.
Ooh,
he left this morning at 3 a.m., texting Rob and Patty kindly to let them know that he was at the airport. Yes.
He's obviously waiting for the rest of us to show up.
What's he taking with him?
I have no idea.
A car?
Lots of shoes, I think.
Body socks.
Shoes and solid colored socks.
Yes. And belts and ties.
So when do you arrive?
We arrive tomorrow afternoon. How about you?
Tomorrow at 4:40.
Okay. We're around the same time. I think we're a little earlier.
We're 4:15.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We don't take a...
I was going to say, why don't we just wait for me?
And Nick is going.
Janice will already be there.
Oh, I need a man.
She left for Chicago last Friday.
Everyone's asking Nick, why are you willingly going to Detroit?
He wants to go to Shinola.
He does, and to see the car stuff. So. Anyway, we'll be sure to tell all you guys how
we'll
fabulous the
museum
is.
I'll let you know if there's a lunchbox museum.
I was pointing out a Maltese museum or something. Probably something cool.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Okay. Future board meeting, July 24th. I'm
so
out of town.
You're out of town. No Alejandro. Okay.
Yes, so you got this, Jason, right? I might not even be on the board anymore.
Yes, you will.
Yeah.
That's kind of
keep dreaming there, buddy.
Motivation for me not to
reapply. Keep dreaming.
Suggested topic for future agendas?
Do you want to see the proposed legislation again? The changes to the exams and the endorsement. I mean, we'll report on whether we have any activity, but
sure.
We'll see the language.
It would be good
okay.
to see it. I think also progress on whether we have any sponsors or aid
right.
or, you know, organizations that are willing to help us push it.
Sounds good.
We'll need to, I was just talking to Tina, make sure the associations see it.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, the other subject, Melissa, I brought up to you to maybe bring up in August was construction management.
Yes, and I actually had, I did a ton of research on it because I had previously asked other states what kind of credit they gave for construction management towards engineering registration and exam authorization, and the other, only a few states answered. The ones that answered said they only give 12 months. Which doesn't mean we have to be stuck to that, but all of that is still there.
So just for background, I mean, I got a call from Wiley Bearup, who's the head of the construction management school at ASU. And he was concerned that his students were having a hard time getting registered in Arizona. And so that goes to two things. I mean, one is the construction management degree is not an ABET accredited degree. It's got a different accreditation for CM. So my point to him, and not representing the board, but myself, is, well, you know, we don't recognize those degrees because the curriculum is different. We would give you credit course by course, you know, and 30 credits are the same as a year. So, yes, you have a disadvantage there, but it's, you know, I don't think that's a big barrier. The one that I think is a big barrier is the fact that, you know, somebody can, you know, get the CM degree, they can take the PE exam and work 20 years, and they still can't get registered, because if they've been doing CM, our statutes only allow them 1 year of experience credit.
If that's all they've been doing. But if they have education in construction management, they somehow qualify to take the test, and then they go and do mechanical or electrical or civil work.
But a lot of those people actually specialize in being resident engineers on projects. Mm. You know, that's what they do their whole careers.
Okay.
So, I mean, we might have people there with 10, 15 years of experience who can't qualify for registration because we limit the experience credit.
Okay.
And in my mind, that's inconsistent with the fact that, you know, one, we're allowing them to take a PE and they're passing it, and two, that exam has a specific specialty. I mean, you can take a transportation, water resources, structural, geotech, or construction management emphasis on that exam. So NCES thinks it's good enough to be an engineering.
We should ask about it at the annual meeting. Because as far as I'm aware, they only talk about B plus 30, and they never talk about, you know, construction management. Whether
I think that's a good question to bring up in August, but I think we should discuss it. And maybe that'll be after NCS, or maybe August is a good time to bring that up.
Sounds good.
And I can invite him if he wants to come and tell the board what his concerns are?
He did appear before Eleanor, and Ed said, get us your curriculum, and we'll compare it to ABET. And it doesn't really...
It's not the same, and I think, I mean, that is what it is. Mm-hmm. But we shouldn't keep people from getting registered if they have the right qualifications.
But, Alejandro, how does that how does that relate to the statute definition of the practice of engineering? Remember that there's an actual definition in the statute as to what constitutes the practice of engineering. And does construction management...
I think this is a topic for a future agenda.
Yes.
Is that correct?
I think that's a subject we should address when we discuss it. Absolutely.
Okay, so I'm writing down, how does CMA relate to the practice of engineering? That was your question.
Yeah, the statute goes into various levels and details. Yeah.
Okay. So if you guys get questions about the rules changes, you can always refer those questioners to us, so you don't have to feel put on the spot. Like, you'll know what all those rule changes are.
Well, the Secretary of State will have the final rules published fairly soon.
I was told the 29th.
Yeah, July.
Did you get an email with the rule changes?
Oh, this month already.
Yeah, okay. Week. Yeah, so that's why I put in the email that it'd be June 29th, so 3 days. I'm going to hopefully hear from on the same it's published, and then I'll get it on the website.
But they won't be affected.
They will not be affected.
You should put that in our...
They won't be affected till...
In our... we have like a newsletter or something?
Yeah,
should definitely... And we should highlight...
The article already.
Oh, okay.
All right.
And maybe highlight what's more relevant to people. Because, I got the email, I think everybody in our office did, and they came up to say, so there's a lot of rule changes. What do they mean to me?
Okay.
So maybe, highlight.
Do like an executive summary in the newsletter.
What
the salient.
For additional information, go to the Word.
Some of the wordsmith thing isn't worth it, but things like taking the data, the expiration data.
Yeah, exactly. That's one that everybody...
Stuff like that people need to know on a daily basis.
That would be quick. Yeah, taking the expiration data out. Yeah.
Whose idea was that?
I don't know. Who came up with that?
I don't know either.
That came up like in 05 or 06.
We're off agenda again. I watched Scott's face and he's like, okay.
Okay. Anything else for future meetings tonight in 15?
So, looking at a newsletter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does anyone want to write anything?
No.
We all do want to write something.
If you give me time, I'll write something.
We should all hear about the construction of the 5 theme parks and where all the water's going to come from. And the destruction of I-10.
I'll write something not about I-10. If you give me like a month or two heads up, I'll write something.
Okay. Month or two. You have it now.
Two.
Okay. Or just when you get to think about it or whatever, send me an email that'll be in my queue of emails that
I think Jack and Steve could write about the water issues.
Five forward.
Yeah.
Just suggesting.
Good idea.
Cool.
Yes.
Do you want to evaluate me, or you want to wait until next month?
I'm already.
Look at him.
Like today, you mean?
Yeah, it's on the agenda.
Is it on the agenda?
Yeah.
Where?
I do have handouts.
Oh, 9D. Oh, I'm sorry. I was going by the packet. My bad.
Statistics review.
I saw people looking at their watches.
All right, 9D.
Let's see that.
You missed that.
Yep, I did. That's my bad. I was ready to adjourn.
I know. That's why I asked.
Can we table it?
Push to a later meeting.
It's the staff person's choice whether to have it in public or executive.
All right. We want to get it over.
I think
we want to get it over.
All right, we're going to move to item 9D.
I think we should table it until those of us that aren't supposed to be on the board anymore are replaced. Maybe that put a little pressure on you to get it done.
It's not up to me. If it were, I'd have replaced you a long time ago.
With Steve Judge.
No.
I don't have any.
All right, so we're... seriously, let's do it now.
Okay.
Okay.
I have...
We're going to go to item 9D.
You want to go executive session on this?
Yeah, we should go.
Do we want to go executive?
talk specifically? Yeah. Are you leaving?
Not now.
To go into executive session, you mean?
Melissa wants to go into executive session.
I do. Thank you, Scott.
All right. Mr. Chair, I move we go into executive session for the executive director's performance review.
Second.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 All right, post. We're going into executive session. We're ready.
Okay.
Ready. We're back in session from, we had an executive session item 9D, continuing the discussion on the review of the executive director performance. So I guess to stay for the record, I think, I speak for myself, but maybe for other board members, I think Melissa's doing an excellent job of carrying the board's mission. And so that's summary of our assessment. There's more to that. Yeah, I don't know if anybody has anything else they want to say in the open session.
I'm going to miss all you old-timers if you get replaced.
Well, I would stay on our chair. But
well,
we just,
right.
We just never have meetings.
Yeah. I think, yes, as I said, my only challenge to you this year would be build some good relationships with the legislature. I think we also have to be a little less timid about pursuing regulation change, you know, statute and rule changes. I think it's time that if we find something that's not working, we tackle it. Yeah.
We're good. We're good with that.
Yes. So, we need a motion to see how we want to adjust for compensation.
So, Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we adjust the executive director's compensation by 5%.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Third. You mean an increase of 5%?
Increase,
yes. Okay. Increase.
Decrease.
Well, that's true. I didn't just say adjust, didn't I?
I said adjust 5% just to make sure.
Yes.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you, Melissa. I appreciate your leadership at the board.
Appreciate you guys. It's fun working with you.
Thanks for all your help.
Thank you.
And just for the record, too, a lot of compliments to staff as well, sitting around this table. Everyone's doing a stellar job.
Yeah. Thank you. You guys are, I don't want to say irreplaceable, but pretty close. So, thank you. All right. I think that was the last item on our agenda. Right?
Yes.
Did I miss anything else?
No, please. Move to adjourn.
All right. We have a move to adjourn.
Second.
Second.
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye.
We're done.